Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, don't mind me. I'm still taking notes and typing things up and having a great time here. Yeah, it's one of those days where the show almost ran into, oh, no, I've got to get started here. So 6 o'clock here in beautiful downtown Milton on the banks of the Blackwater River in Florida. And I should put that in the morning thing. Who knows one day. But there's a lot going on. There's so much going on. It's staggering. Kind of made a little decision about Mondays for a while since I am without producer for a bit. And because it's tough for me to talk for 2 hours to myself, because even I get bored. So I'm going to start doing something on Mondays in the second hour. First hour, I'm going to talk to you about the news and things that happened over the weekend and all that kind of good stuff. But in the second hour, I'm going to start playing some of the classic interviews from my WEBY day. These are big, big people that I was lucky enough to meet. Most of them because I went to CPAC in 2019. That would be folks like Gordon Chang, the late Herb London, Grover Norquist, Colonel Doug McGregor, some different folks. I think probably start with Gordon Chang because he had an amazing hour with me talking about North Korea. And the nice thing about these folks is they're good enough to donate just a huge amount of time. I mean, most of these guys do, 2 minutes on Fox and maybe 3 minutes on Newsmax and One American News and stuff. And they really, you know, the mentality of the news is that shorter is better, that people don't have an attention span, that they don't have time to think. And we spent a lot of time doing stuff. And in fact, yesterday, although I think it was, you know, like I say, kind of a dry topic for a lot of people. It's like when I go over legislation, you know, just to see in detail how the Supreme Court works. And that's something you may want to listen to in bits and pieces, just because there's a lot there. I can't do the show in bits and pieces because I have 3 hours and it kind of has to run together. But that's how we do it. All right, a lot of things here on the agenda before Shelby gets here at 7 and then Josie at 7:30. So it's 6 o'clock now. So in the second hour, we've got Shelby Frenette with the Cruise and Travel Report. And then an hour and a half from now, we've got Josie Cossie with the Latino Report. And after that, 3 hour, Chancey Terry, who was doing Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday, Tuesday, has now moved to Wednesday. So she'll be in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow with hopefully we'll get David Jones back, who's been on a big vacation for a while. So changes all the time here. People come and go, and they take breaks, and they you know, do stuff, and they come back more interesting. And, you know, it's really kind of crazy how it all works. Me, I'm still here. You know, my big goal is to get a CPAC, so I have to write them a very, very strong email today, you know, seeing if I can find out whether I can go, do something that they've never had before. In fact, nobody's ever had before, which is the teaching of citizen legislative workshops and, of course, to be able to broadcast Action Radio directly from CPAC. I'm going to go anyway, I may broadcast the show from my Airbnb or, in the hotel or somewhere. Who knows? I just need Wi-Fi. You know, so I can bring my computer and my I can set up anywhere. So a lot of that stuff is still in flux. I wish I could get that settled, though, because I'd like to be able to plan and get some, you know, stuff for you guys so you know what's happening. Okay, just in the last 24 hours, first of all, Sunday night, Dr. Peter Pry, who does our Monday National Security Report, which is unbelievably brilliant on his part. The man's a genius, and he has just a recollection of history and physics, you know, and nuclear weapons and, you know, EMP and culture and society and just, you know, all the things that we get to talking about. That if you haven't listened to our Monday reports, and they're only an hour, and I say only an hour because they go by really fast. He's been with us, I think, almost 2 years now, one of our longest standing reporters. Well, he was on Mark Levin, Life, Liberty, and Levin on Fox on Sunday night. And so I kind of was sort of half kidding. I said, well, you know, why don't you invite Mark Levin on our show? He's okay. I'm like, huh? So he says, yeah, let me email his producer. So that's on the show yesterday. You want to check it out? Go ahead. It's right there. So that's what I'm hoping for. Because that would change everything. If we can get Mark Levin on the show, especially if we get him on the show, you know, on a somewhat regular basis as an advisor to talk about our citizen legislation, to help advance, you know, the things that are going on here. You know, I'd happily make him, you know, the second Action Radio host and show him how we do what we do. And he can hopefully show us how he does what he does, you know, and we can talk about his books and we can talk about the concepts and we can implement the visions and all the things he thinks about, we can actually, make them into reality and, Of course, I think about a few things myself, then I'd like to make those a reality as well. So that's what's going on with Dr. Price. So I'm just waiting to hear, hopefully sometime, maybe this week, next week, or maybe he'll just bring him on and surprise me. I mean, Dr. Price like that. He'll do that. He'll just say, oh, by the way, I've got a guest. You know, why don't you pick up the extra line? And they'll be like, you know, Mark Levin. So that wouldn't surprise me. Well, he helped us with General McInerney. I don't know if you guys remember General McInerney, who was the one who first reported that the November, this is before the November election in 2020, before the insurrection by the Democrats, that the real insurrection, not the one they talk about. What they talk about is the cover-up. Just like the impeachments they talk about are false when they should be impeached. The Russian collusion they talk about is false when they were colluding with Russia. And the insurrection that they talk about with Trump is false because they were the ones who did the insurrection. So it's projection, you know, Marxism. You know, it's like they accuse everybody else of Marxism, you know, what they're doing. So if you want to know what the Democrats are doing, look what they're accusing you of. Anyway, so way back before that, General McInerney, highly intelligent, I think he was involved in military intelligence, you know, reported that the Democrats were going to steal the election, and here's how they're going to do it. They were going to, things are going to be fine until the evening, and then everything was going to shut down, and all of a sudden Brandon would start to get more and more votes. And then eventually it would look like he won by just a little bit. I mean, he predicted this and he called it because he knew the plan. All right. So this is not a big surprise. So when it actually happened, exactly as he said it would happen. And the fact that the gonadless, you know, geldings in the Republican Party did nothing and still really have done nothing to decertify and disqualify Brandon. And that's when I left the party. I'm not going to be a party of wimps. I'm not going to be a party of weenies. I'm not going to be a party of geldings. I'm just not. And until they show me that they're stallions again, that they have some gumption, and there are a few that do. You know, in fact, it's interesting. It's mostly the women that have the most amount of guts, and you know, and nothing against women, but I'm just saying it's just interesting that especially when using the gelding stallion analogy. For those of you who have actually looked it up and know what I'm talking about, it's kind of funny. But folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, you know, the really strong folks, and there's some others too in the party as well. Actually, who's doing pretty well is Rand Paul. I mean, he's a bit late. You know, going after Fauci. I've been going after Fauci for 2 years. You know, so they're doing well, but they're really late to the party. I mean, we reported with Bill Gertz from the Washington Times back in February of 2020 that the Wuhan lab is where Corona came from, coronavirus, where COVID came from. You know, so we report on March 2nd. You know, I have to keep blowing our horn so that, you know, I'm trying to attract a few more people here to realize that we're way ahead of everybody else, way ahead. Sometimes by months and maybe years, you know, in terms of what's going on, and especially as we look forward with citizen legislation. Our citizen legislation is way ahead of anybody because we're the only ones doing it. So kind of by default, we're it, which is kind of interesting too. Anyway, so we knew about that. I wrote a bill for Congress back February 27th that they had to split the money between vaccines and prevention and cures. So only half the money could go to vaccines, and at least half, hopefully more, would go to, but no more than half for vaccines, and at least half or more, preferably, would go to treatments and cures. So, you know, we all knew, anybody who listened to Action Radio back in February and March of 2020 knew that everything that was happening with the government was wrong. And this is why I call this a government-induced pandemic. So I've dragged out my favorite chart. The one that proves that the pandemic ended pretty much around July 4th, 2020. Okay. So like most viruses, it had about a 3-month lifespan. They say 10 to 12 weeks. So we'll give it 3 months, right? So you look at the CDC chart, and it's available at the Action Radio group page on Facebook. My page is only for my friends out of necessity because of leftist trolls. And the other groups I posted are private. So I'm not going to tell you where they are. Okay. So the only public one you can access is the one at the Action Radio group. That's a Facebook page called the Action Radio group. Now it's public, so you can look at it, but you can't comment unless you're a member. So that's how that works. And you can join too. Just answer 3 questions. What is it about Facebook? The people, I don't know, all these groups, you know, nobody wants to answer the questions. They think it's a formality. It's like, you know, do you agree to the terms of service? Yes. Have you read the terms of service? No. What are you agreeing to? You have no idea, right? Same thing here. People think they can just join a group without answering the questions. The reason the questions are there is so that I can get to know you. I want to know who you are and why you want to join the group. I'm not looking for numbers. I'm looking for people. You know, there's a difference. If I wanted numbers, I wouldn't have questions, but that's why I do it. Anyway, so I post this chart, and what it has is it runs February through July. January? I think it's maybe it's January. I'm going to pull it up here. Hang on. Actually, I've got rid of my Facebook page, which I need to bring back because I'm going to use it for my Trump comments here in a minute. Okay, there's a jihadi thing. Yeah, we're gonna talk about the Texas thing tomorrow. Do you remember when I told you that as soon as I found out it was a British citizen that had attacked and terrorized and taken hostages in this Texas synagogue, I said it's probably a Muslim. Well, guess what? It's a Muslim. It's a Muslim terrorist. It's a Muslim terrorist who has a record of being a Muslim terrorist, whose sister is in jail there for being a Muslim terrorist. Okay, so this is you're kind of getting the pattern here. So if you want to learn more, the best place to go, of course, is Jihad Watch with Robert Spencer. That's where you find out the good stuff. Anyway, so I've got some things I've said here on Facebook. Facebook's always fun. You know, so my question was the British citizen who invaded the Texas synagogue an illegal alien from Brandon's open border? And the answer is no. But it's just as bad because I was wrong there. He was not. I was right that it was the British citizen was a foreign was a Muslim terrorist. So I got that right. What I got wrong, though, was he didn't cross the country, you know, through Brandon's open southern border. But he came here because Brandon had gotten rid of Trump's protections from Muslim terrorists coming into the country. So there are four executive orders that Trump had in place to prevent people like this Jewish-hating Muslim terrorist from coming into the country. And, of course, Brandon got rid of them his first day. And we're going to go over those tomorrow. But so I got that wrong. So it's just as bad, though, because he was able to enter the country because Brandon doesn't have any safeguards anymore against Muslim terrorists. All right. So not only has Brandon opened the border, he's opened the country to Muslim terrorists. And this is just one of what's probably going to be tragically many examples. All right. You want to call me? Feel free. 215-383-3832. Action Radio is open for business. So I found this chart and I made a copy of it and put it on my computer. So the FBI, if you're looking to steal information, it's right here. Okay. But I got a memory, so I remember pretty much what it is. So, you know, but anyway, until that day comes, until they burst through my door. Look, guys, if you're going to raid my house, do it while I'm on the air so at least I can document it, okay? All right, anyway. No, I'm not going to give you my address. I may be crazy, but I'm not completely stupid. Anyway, at least get my name right, you know, on the warrant, even if you even have a warrant, you know, FBI, KGB. And if you are listening, FBI, KGB, which you probably are, and you want to call the show, 215-383-3832, just, you know, let's have a chat. Let me see if I can straighten you out and, you know, get you away from your totalitarian Marxist ways and bring you back to being Americans. All right. Having said that, the chart that I have here is the provisional death counts for coronavirus, COVID-19, week ending 2-1. So it was February 1st, 2020 through July 11th of 2020. And what you'll see is in February, it's pretty much zero. And then it starts very slowly. But then it goes really rapidly starting about third week in February. And the peak deaths from COVID, real COVID, you know, the COVID virus, not the government COVID. Government COVID didn't start till later. But the real virus, the real COVID, coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, peaked in April 15th, tax day. It's the highest death count. It's like 15,000 some odd people died on April 15th, which is kind of ironic, actually, in a tragic way. So beginning of February, it starts. The all age groups climb rapidly. Of course, the older the age group, the higher the number. So that would be the 65 and older group had the highest death count on April 15th, 2020. And then it starts tapering rapidly at a 45-degree angle and then comes to a crashing zero about mid-July. Isn't that interesting? Now, it says that these are provisional and there were a fair amount of death certificates that weren't, you know, that hadn't been sent in yet. But it doesn't matter to me because, A, this is back when death certificates were honestly reporting who died of COVID and who died of, you know, whatever else they died of, right? That's where the death count was going to zero. And like a typical virus, it ran up rapidly, peaks, and as soon as we got, you know, herd immunity, the things that they say we don't have, herd immunity was April 15th, 2020. And then you'll see the chart dropping down rapidly at least a 45-degree angle, sometimes steeper, meeting zero around mid-July, which is why I call July 4th COVID Independence Day. So the death count was still there, like about 300, but it was rapidly heading towards zero. And even if a few more death certificates came in the next couple of weeks, you know, still it wouldn't make that much difference. The trend was zero. Well, after that, that's when they started cooking the books, bringing in the mandates. They said they went from deaths to cases. They had lockdowns, mass mandates, school closures, beach closures, you know, all the things that were closed, stress-induced pandemic. You know, they locked people in their homes to make sure they get it. They took COVID-positive people to all the nursing homes, especially in Washington State, Michigan, and New York, to make sure the old people died, to get the numbers as high as possible to scare you into getting vaccines, which didn't come out until December. So this is how it works. So everything after July 2020 is a lie, complete total lie. That's the government pandemic, government-induced pandemic. And I still don't know how many people died because treatment was withheld, The cures were banned, you know, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc. Those are the cures and the treatments and the preventions, okay? So the cures, treatments, and preventions were banned. Their early treatment was banned, you know, so they could get vaccines. So all this is done to get vaccines, right? So everything they did was designed to make sure that the only option you could possibly have or even think of, because they'd censored everything else, was vaccines. Why? Because that's where the billions of dollars were. This is a marketing campaign. This is like monopoly capitalism, okay, at its worst. So monopoly capitalism is a good thing. You know, I don't like the word capitalism because Marx came up with it, so I prefer to say free market. So free markets are a good thing, but in order for a free market to work, it actually has to be free, all right? And what that means is there's no monopoly running everything. So what you have is a government, big tech, big pharma monopoly to market vaccines to the exclusion of everything else. And how do they do that? Well, they literally killed off their competition, literally. You know, they made the cures illegal. They made the treatments illegal. They banned the doctors for prescribing the treatments and cures. You know, they took the treatments and cures off the market so they could get an emergency authorization for their experimental drug wacko. You know, and that's where we are. And plus, they made everything a COVID death when it was like, you know, motorcycle, old age, heart attack, things like that. So it's really kind of interesting. In a tragic way, all the things that happened after July, after the real COVID actually, you know, died out. The Alpha strain was dead. It was gone by mid-July 2020. And, of course, they had to bring back, you know, the Delta strain in order to sell vaccines. And they did that by, you know, the government-induced pandemic. And then, of course, there's the remdesivir ventilator death march, you know, which is you walk into the hospital, okay, you're as sick as you can be. You get your remdesivir, makes your kidneys fail, which makes your lungs fill up with fluid. So then they put you on a ventilator to try and blow the fluid out and give you oxygen, even though your lungs are filling with fluid, rather than taking the fluid out like a normal doctor would do, like they did to me. Okay. So when I had my chest filled up with fluid, but that was blood thinners. It's a different story. Anyway, point being that you know, the hospital doesn't care because they make $100,000 off your death. They make $20-$30 off you know, hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, unless your family doctor prescribes it, in which case – you know, the family doctor makes the $20 or $30, but the, you know, I mean, would you rather have a cure or would you rather give the hospital $100,000 with your death? I mean, obviously that's a rhetorical question, but that's where we are. That's the question people need to ask themselves. Would you rather die in a hospital and give them $100,000 of taxpayer money with your death, or would you rather be cured for about $20-$30 of hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin? I mean, obviously that's a stupid question. But that's really the question that the government is demanding of you. You know, come to us and die, and we'll give your hospital $100,000. You know, going through the death march, or you know, you can defy us, treat yourself, and live the rest of a long and happy life. Screw them. But that's where this is the hypocrisy of where we are right now. It used to be, you know, remember the saying used to be, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help you." Now it's like I'm from the government, my policy is here to kill you. Because there's money in it. That's really where we are. All right. So look, a couple more things. I want to scroll down a bit. Because something really fascinating, it hasn't been gone over as well as I think it should. And that's what happened at the Trump rally Saturday night. Now, you don't hear a lot about that Trump rally. You hear some clips on One American News. You know, there, because news, they don't have the time to deal with it. Right? I do. That's the difference. So I'm scrolling down as I'm saying this because I want to get down to the Trump. I had the post pinned for a while, and then I unpinned it. And, of course, it disappeared way back in my stack of stuff here, of Facebook tweets, like the GOP geldings have raised whining and complaining while doing nothing into an art form. And this is one of my little sayings here. Oh, here's another one, too. Black Americans are being replaced by illegal aliens as the chosen dependency group. I'm going to think about that, too. Oh, here's another one, too, I wrote. If the states without an income tax are more prosperous, wouldn't the federal government be more prosperous without an income tax, too? Think about that. States like Florida and Texas don't have income taxes, and they're some of the most prosperous states in the country. We've got a $15 billion surplus in Florida right now, and we don't have an income tax. States like New York and California have a huge income taxes, and yet they're vastly in debt. So if you really want to get crazy, we can say that income taxes causes government debt. Oh, wouldn't that be funny? Oh, Facebook, you took out one of my you said I had false information. I wonder what I wrote. This is C video. I'll take a look at it. Must be. Oh, I know what it was. Oh, it was an actual hearing. Yeah, this is an actual hearing on COVID was false information, where doctors talked about early treatments. Oh, I can't see that on Facebook. Nope, sorry, can't do that. No early treatment. All right, so that's not coming out. I'm going to pause that. We'll get back to that later. All right. Don't mind me. I'm just rambling. And the tennis star is back in Serbia from Australia because, you know, as I said on One American News, one of the healthiest people in the world, you know, couldn't play tennis because he didn't have the backs. All right, here we go. So I got like 32 comments, and I want to kind of go over these, you know, a little bit of detail. Not enough to bore you, I hope, but we'll see. Anyway, so Trump made a speech. He made a speech in Arizona, which is no coincidence because Arizona is the only state to complete an audit. But they're not finished because they haven't disqualified Brandon yet. So the findings of the audit, and of course the media focuses on the count. They said, well, look, they did a recount, you know, and Brandon won. Well, of course he won the recount. That was the control. That was to account for all the fraudulent votes. So if you count the fraudulent votes, of course Brandon wins. The trick is to count the honest votes, and that's where he loses, okay? So they did that as a control, and they proved that the count was false, you know? And then they said, here's why, because you got false votes because of, you know the reasons, right? You know, dead people vote, out-of-state people vote, illegal aliens vote, there's ballot harvesting, mail vote fraud, you know, all the various frauds, you know? And then you've seen the videos of the ballots from under the desk, and of course there are thousands of affidavits of people testifying under penalty of perjury, which is a multi-year prison term, that there was cheating. Okay, so we all know that. So the question is, where's the disqualification? You know, Wendy Rogers, we're talking to you. Where's the disqualification? That's what has to come next. Anyway, so it is. So I used to belong to a group on Facebook that was very active politically, and I'm not quite sure what happened. I think it was taken over by trolls, and it sort of gradually, you know, went by the wayside. And all of us, the originals, we kind of lost interest because we didn't want to deal with the trolls. We didn't have to want to keep constantly explaining ourselves to people that had no interest in it anyway. They were just trying to cause trouble. So most conservatives have realized that you don't argue with leftists because they don't care. They don't care what you say. They don't care about facts. They don't care about logical arguments. They don't care about anything. They're just there to make your life miserable by saying, you know, what you say is just your opinion, or it's not true, or it's, you know, anything like that. And of course, you know, then you ask them to back it up and say, well, we don't have to. We're listening to experts. And, of course, the experts are giving them the false narrative that they're going by. And so, you know, so I don't bother with those folks anymore. Anyway, so I wrote a post about anybody who wants to comment, you know, on the Trump press conference, you know, hop on my Facebook page. Well, the problem is I got so many restrictions now that, you know, only about 3 people saw it. So anyway, I'm just going to Trump said BS, only he used the full word on worldwide TV. This is my first comment. Trump is openly disputing the 2020 election. Sounds good. He started off saying he won in 2020. Being in Arizona is no accident. You know, where's the audit challenge to disqualify Brandon? Okay, that's just what I just said. Carrie Lake's called at the podium. Trump's MAGA hat says 45. Then I joked around. It should say 45 and 46. See, that would be funny. And ridicule is one of the three cures for totalitarianism. First of all is truth. Second is ridicule. And third is parallel structures. And we do all three here. We do truth. And I tell you the truth, I would never openly lie to you unless, you know, I wouldn't. You know, I can't think of a reason why I would. So I don't have to worry about it because I stand by everything I say. If I'm wrong, I'll tell you because I make mistakes. You know, and if I'm wrong, I'll correct it. Like we just did this morning, you know, where it was a prediction, so it's different. I predicted that the Muslim Jewish hating terrorist across the southern border, he didn't. He came into the country legally because Brandon made it easy for terrorists to get here. Okay. So, okay, like, yeah, like, wouldn't it be great if Trump said, you know, 45 and 46. I'm sorry. That to me is funny. All right. He's back to using illegal aliens. He doesn't say legal immigrants. Trump called Afghanistan a surrender. You know, it's like he read, or maybe either he or someone on his staff is listening to Action Radio. Cause I've said all these things. You've got to go back to using illegal aliens instead of illegal immigrants. You've got to start using the term surrender. It was a surrender in Afghanistan. It wasn't a withdrawal. I got here, likes his Supreme Court picks, but Fratboy Kavanaugh voted with the Marxists to keep healthcare workers, you know, with their vaccine mandate. That was a big mistake on Kavanaugh's part. He screwed up. Fratboy screwed up. Well, Fratboy shouldn't be on the court. Fratboy wasn't a good thing. Fratboy was put there by the Federalists, which is, I think, a rhino society that Trump was listening to. Same thing with Coney Island Barrett. I'm not convinced about her yet. She's kind of like midway between Fratboy Kavanaugh and the good justices, Clarence Thomas, Sam Alito, and it was turning out to be pretty decent as Neil Gorsuch. And so those are the three decent ones. Then you've got the squishies, which I would put as, the squishy justice would be Coney Island Barrett. And then you've got the leftist in training, you know, John Roberts and Fratboy Kavanaugh. And you've got the ultra-Marxists, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. This pretty much the Supreme Court lines up anyway. So now Trump was talking about therapeutics for COVID. Okay, that's good. See, this was a huge change. Now, I made this point yesterday that I think that somebody has talked to Trump, and it, or maybe a few people have, Peter Navarro, Scott Atlas, Steve Bannon, maybe some other folks, hopefully the doctors, Peter McCullough, Robert Malone, Dr. Zelenko, Judy Mikovits, people like that. Well, I don't think he's talked to Zelenko Mikovits. That would be a stretch. Come on my show. I can arrange it. You know, I can. I know them both. You know, Trump comes on my show. I'll invite Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Mikovits, and some other folks, and we can have a real chat. Let's get Mark Levin on in that, too. See the possibilities here? Actually, because I've got multiple lines. I don't have to have just one person. You know, so we can have a panel discussion, which we do here pretty frequently. But did anybody else notice what I noticed? That Trump didn't talk about ventilators. He didn't talk about warp speed. He didn't talk about the wonders of vaccines because he's been booed. I mentioned this yesterday when he was on with Bill O'Reilly. He's been booed for saying things like that. Okay, big problem. And so he's not talking about that. So he's doing all kinds of really, really good stuff. What else have we got here? He's completely ripping Biden. I don't think he called him Brandon, but he never called him President Biden. Not once did he use the word president followed by Biden. It was just Biden. Okay, that's intentional. All right. And you think, I see very few accidents out there. Most of this stuff is intentional. Trump says Democrats want to turn, you know, U.S. into a communist country. I mean, he openly said that. He's accusing the Democrats of saying, you know, if you're white, you don't get health care. Well, he said if you're white, you don't get health care, which is true. The Democrat policy, the health care policy of New York is white people are last. Okay. That's racist. You know, so you want to talk about racism, but they think it's okay because, well, it's against white people and, you know, it's their turn. Okay. Called the Dems fascist. He says Pelosi's turned the House in that unselect committee, the January 6th committee, into a Stalinist show trial. And I go on like that. He says the guy who shot Ashley Babbitt did it for no reason. That would be Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd of the Capitol Hill Police, someone who should have been arrested on the spot. We've got to calls the folks in the January folks in the D.C. gulag. He said they're in a political prison. Okay. I mean, he's saying all the right things. Somebody's talked to this guy. I don't know I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, but you go over that rally that Trump held Saturday in Arizona. It's a completely different Donald Trump, radically different and for the better. You know, he's saying and doing all the things that I said he had to say and do before I could support him. Let's see if he's going to do them. He's saying them. At least he's saying the right things now. Asked how many FBI informants were in with the Trump supporters, you know, like Ray Epps bringing them into the Capitol. Okay. I mean, he's openly questioning these things. Maybe he's talked to Mosley, Jonathan Mosley, who does our legal report, who is a criminal defense attorney, Second Amendment attorney, constitutional law attorney out of Virginia. He's been on CNN. We put the recording of that. But he's defending a couple of the people in the D.C. gulag. So we're on top of all that. So we got Dr. Peter Pry was on with Mark Levin. We've got Jonathan Mosley on with CNN. When's my turn? When do I get to go on some of these shows? Anyway, Trump said that the election has to go back to the states for their electors, you know, the right ones, the Trump electors. Says the real insurrection took place November 3rd. He says the Democrats know the American people are against them. That's why they cheat. These are all Trump quotes from the rally. Okay. Cause I wrote them down at the time. You know, Democrats are attacking, they attack voting rights, but they're erasing, you know, American votes and replacing them with illegal votes, which is true. He says, Trump says a lot of information is going to be coming out about the election. And it goes to the Arizona fraud numbers. He talks about election correction in various states. Now he's using my words, election correction. I don't know if I was the first to say it, but I'm the first I know to say it. You know, he wants the sanctuary city officials charged as accessories to the illegal alien crimes. Where did you first hear that before? I don't know, here, a year ago, at least 2 years ago, maybe three. I've been talking about that since before Action Radio, probably back in my WEBY days. So this would be within the last 5 years. I've called for all the city officials of sanctuary cities to be held as accessories for allowing the crimes to be committed in their cities by illegals. And he pledged to send all the Biden illegals back. Isn't that cool? I don't know how he's going to do it, but at least he says with ICE and some of those other folks, I got to introduce him to the concept of civil asset forfeiture, because the IRS, through the ITIN, the Individual Tax Identification Number, could identify the illegal aliens and using the IRS seize all their stuff. So you could do a massive seizure of everything the illegal aliens have by computer, you know, and say, look, you got a week. Get your asses out of here. If you don't get your asses out of here, everything that you own is going to be confiscated. And then you're going to get your asses out of here because we know who you are, and, you know, we'll just kind of go from there. And he also talked about banning critical race theory. He also said ban men from being in women's sports. So I mean, it was just a great, great press, rally. And the others should be pretty much the same. But once you get those points, you can always refer back, you know, in my shows and podcasts to find out, you know, what I just went through. But anytime you get to do that, feel free. I don't know how much of my topic I'm going to get to in the first hour. We have the third hour. We'll kind of pick it up. Anyway, let me play you our latest piece from Santa Rosa Volunteers that I made. This is on Federalist Paper number 8. And so today I will endeavor to make anti-Federalist Paper number 8. And of course, we got Shelby at the top of the hour. We got Josie at the bottom of the next hour. And at the top of the third hour, who knows? I don't have anything scheduled. So we'll just kind of wing it and do what we usually do. Back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Paper number 8. Alexander Hamilton continues his obsession with posing fabricated scenarios in order to try to scare we the people into thinking ratification of the Constitution is a good thing because it will remove the possibility of his fabricated scenarios ever coming to pass. The pattern over the course of several Federalist Papers is to claim that if the Constitution isn't ratified, then the several states will go into separate factions, probably go to war, and then some foreign power will take us over again. That's how the standard argument from the Federalists goes. Alexander Hamilton begins the first paragraph with this. Assuming it, therefore, as an established truth that the several states, in case of disunion, or such combinations of them as might happen to be formed out of the wreck of the general confederacy, would be subject to those vicissitudes of peace and war, of friendship and enmity with each other, which have fallen to the lot of all neighboring nations not united under one government. Let us enter into a concise detail of some of the consequences that would attend such a situation. Quite an assumption. It's so big an assumption, his whole paper is based on it. So in reality, Federalist 8 is based on nothing. The second paragraph is so preposterous, I can't believe it. Hamilton argues that war between the states is all but inevitable without the Constitution, because, unlike Europe, we don't have permanent standing armies keeping world peace. However, any study of Europe will reveal a couple thousand years of wars going back to the Romans, hardly a stellar example to inspire the population that the Constitution will keep the peace. Hamilton seems to have overlooked that the Constitution had only 2-year appropriations for the army, so it would have no permanence of a standing army. If the Constitution is supposed to prevent war and illegal competition between the states, to the detriment of the United States and our freedom, why would Hamilton want standing armies of a European character, having just thrown off the standing army of England? He actually contradicts his own argument by saying in the second paragraph this line. The disciplined armies always kept on foot on the continent of Europe, though they bear a malignant aspect to liberty and economy, have, notwithstanding, been productive of the signal advantage of rendering sudden conquest impracticable and of preventing that rapid desolation which used to mark the progress of war prior to their introduction. Did you catch that part about armies? That they bear a malignant aspect to liberty and economy? Malignant? As in sickness and death of liberty and economy? What we fought for in the war for independence, all for the sake of what? Peace or stability? So what exactly does Hamilton want the Constitution for, if not to protect liberty, commerce, and therefore private property? My contempt for the Federalists grows every time I read one of the Federalist Papers, and I realize that they are really elitists who don't care about individual rights, economy, property, the individual states, our self-defense, or even we, the people. What Hamilton really wants is a stable national government ruling over the states and the people, with a malignant standing army to keep him and his elitist friends and colleagues in our nation's capital safe from foreign invasion and safe from what they actually appear to fear more, which is rule of them by the states and by the people, which is supposed to be the entire reason the Constitution is created in the first place. If the Constitution is really just the opposite of what we've been told, that the Federalist writers and proponents actually wrote and sold to this country a Constitution specifically designed to protect the national, not federal government in Washington, from we the people, then everything we've been told about the Constitution is wrong based on what one of the writers of the Constitution, Alexander Hamilton, is telling us about the Constitution in Federalist Paper Number 8. Let me conclude the quotes with this one sentence where Hamilton appears to try and tell you, after saying that standing armies are malignant and can take your liberty and economy, he makes this one conciliatory statement that the people really have nothing to fear from his standing army, because even though standing armies can and do deprive domestic and foreign populations of rights, resources, and property, Hamilton says it can't happen here because the army isn't big enough. He says, "The smallness of the army renders the natural strength of the community an overmatch for it, and the citizens, not habituated to look up to the military power for protection or to submit to its oppressions, neither love nor fear the soldiery. They view them with a spirit of jealous acquiescence in a necessary evil and stand ready to resist a power which they suppose may be exerted to the prejudice of their rights." Well, that was then. Nowadays, the military is huge. But the real standing army is the federal bureaucracy and all their armed agents and soldiers of departments like Justice, the FBI, the ATF, the IRS, and all the thousands of heavily armed agencies and agents ready at any time to enforce totalitarianism while still proclaiming they are protecting democracy. It's time to disarm, disband, and defund the standing army that has become the standing bureaucracy, and for the same reasons as the army only has a 2-year appropriation. Maybe the agencies and departments should be operated with the same restrictions. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, besmall
B-U-S-I-N-E-S-S. And you can reach him by email at eric@bsmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Yeah, was that saying from the James Bond film, "The world is not enough"? The world is a start. Work on the rest later. Okay, let's get in some fun here. A couple of announcements. First of all, live chat is open. So if you want to go to live chat, feel free. You can type in any message there. And if you're not registered already, get yourself a free account by going to the bottom of the page, registering for free with Blog Talk, and then you can participate in live chat. Type me a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I think to look back at live chat. Also, we got our Skype line. We have a Skype line if you want to call us. So it's right there. It's the third line down. After click on the thinker to start the show, Strikeforce Energy Drinks. The international Skype line calls online, and her name is live:cid.fddbac53a2909de1. I don't know how that works. I got to ask Alan how he calls in. Alan might kind of got a surprise for Shelby. Alan Dawson might join us from Belize. They're all friends. Don't know how often they talk, though, but if Alan joins us, don't be surprised today when Shelby calls in. So that'd be kind of funny. All right. So the other last thing, let me see. I got that. If you want to contribute to us, we have paypal.me/actionradio for those that want to contribute. And that's where you're also going to go if you want to advertise on our station or just, sponsor the show or anything like that. So talk to me. You can email me, Greg, @writeyourlaws.com, and then I'll take care of that. All right, one thing I forgot to do is to get Brandon's daily schedule. So before we get into all the money that she's been secretly socking away, let's find out what's going on with Brandon's day. So I'm going to get myself a new window. This is kind of fun. So I'm talking, mousing, doing all these things at the same time. New window. Where's my new window? There it is. Fortunately, I have a bookmark all set to go for Brandon's daily schedule. Let's see what the dear boy is up to today. Joe Biden, president's public schedule from Factbase. Oh, he's got a busy day. He gets a daily brief at 10:15. Well, we can rush our day now. So Brandon has to have his little wake-up call and his nice little breakfast, and then he gets a daily brief. So he doesn't have to actually say anything. No press. Then 11:15, an hour later, the president and vice president, in name only, received the weekly economic briefing. So he's got two classes today. This is kind of fun. Well, I don't know. I'm trying to imagine what the economic briefing would be. Well, sir, your policies suck, even though they're not your policies. They really belong to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. But quite frankly, sir, your numbers are tanking. You know, Trump's fond of saying, sir, sir, your numbers, the economy sucks. Inflation is ridiculously high. There's no money in the economy. Supply chain is terrible. You don't have any energy for people. You've restricted that. You've done everything wrong. And the country hates you. Okay, so there's your economic briefing. That was easy. I could do it myself. It looks like at noon, in-town pool call time. So I guess they're going to have some kind of press conference at noon. And then this press, oh, here's the press briefing. So they call it. So I guess that means, okay, so if you're in town as a journalist and you're part of the White House press corps, at noon's your call-in time. So I guess you have to have an early lunch or a late breakfast. Anyway, 12:15, press briefing by Press Secretary Jen Psaki and Infrastructure Implementation Coordinator Mitch Landrieu. Infrastructure Implementation Coordinator. Is that Build Back Better? Is that the $5 trillion total debacle? Now, you'll notice that Brandon actually doesn't have to do anything today. He has no meetings. He has no schedule. He has no bills he's reviewing. He has no, fortunately, God, no executive orders. He has no foreign dignitaries. He has no phone calls. He has no administration of any kind. He doesn't have to do a damn thing. He sits through a briefing at 10:15, a briefing at 11:15. He's done. And those briefings can't be long, what, 25 minutes? Because he has the attention span of a two-year-old, all right? So this is his day. So this person that has been installed in office by government, for government, of government, you know, we used to be, Lincoln's idea would be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. This is a government of the government, by the government, and for the government. It's the exact reverse. It's like Lincoln's reversed. You know, that's what we have right now. Anyway, so Brandon has two things he has to do today, one at 10:15. He gets to listen to a daily brief, you know, at 11:15 he gets an economic brief, both of which I think I've already done. So the daily brief would be everything you're doing is wrong. Stop it. Reverse. Go back to everything Trump did. You'll be fine. Okay, there's your daily brief. Economic brief. Stop it. Reverse everything you're doing. The economy will be fine. You know, go back to what Trump was doing. So I've now covered the president's activities for the day. All right, let's get on to the person that I have named. I gotta move that over here. I gotta move some stuff around a little bit. Yeah, here it is. The person I have named for at least, I don't know, a year and a half now, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, and now avaricious vaccine drug pusher, the one and only Dr. Fascist. So, well, that's not the article I wanted. Where's the one I wanted? No, that's not it. I can move some stuff around. I'm sorry. Moving stuff. Where's my article? I had it all set to go. 100% Democrats, there's a fraternity, information, Texas synagogue. Yeah, we're going to cover the Texas situation tomorrow. Bum, 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 bum. Okay, where is my... here we go. Sorry for the delay. My mistake. So this is from Breitbart. This is from a couple of days ago. You'll notice that this hasn't really been brought up since. We're now the 18th. This is from the 15th. Report in Breitbart, Anthony Fauci's $10 million 2020 investment portfolio includes Chinese companies. What a surprise. Of course they include Chinese companies. Why do you think he's so protective of Wuhan? Why do you think he's so, he's talking down gain of function, even though we know he did it. He knows. We know. He knows. He did it. You know, we can do this back and forth like ping pong. All right. So this is why he's so protective of that. This is why he lies, because he's got to protect his Chinese companies. He's got to protect his investments. You know, so instead of being follow the science, this guy's follow the money, which is what we all knew. I mean, we knew it was about money. We've known about his money for a year. Anyway, so the article says, and this is by, let me see if I can, by Wendell Husbio, H-U-S-E-B-O, and the O has a line through it. So I guess it's this Scandinavian. So that to be then. Vandal, who's the bro? Who's the bro? Okay, we're speaking the Swedish, yeah. So we get the herring, we have the breakfast, here you go. This is what Josie likes when I do the accents. So Vandal, who's the bro? That's what we're going to call you, Vandal, who's the bro from the Scandinavian countries, yeah. All right. So it's this Dr. Anthony Fauci's reported $10.4 million portfolio, you know, 2020 investment portfolio included Chinese companies. So let's recap. According to Fauci's 2020 financials, first released by Senator Roger Marshall. Remember, he was the one that Fauci called a moron, you know, and that all the news media said, you know, Fauci's released all this stuff. You know, Senator Roger Marshall, you're a moron. They all accused him of being a moron. Well, you know you're onto something when they start accusing you of being a moron. Well, apparently he was. So anyway, so he disclosed this. He releases Fauci's real finances. And then it gets reported by the New York Post, one of my favorite news sources. And then it says President Biden, well, that's a misnomer, Biden's top medical advisor held investments in companies in China through a fund named Matthews Pacific Tiger Fund. Well, anything Tiger is Asian. I mean, that's just, that's, you know, that's a given. And then we've got Dr. Robert Marshall. So Senator Marshall is also Dr. Marshall, which is interesting. See, the doctors are doing well. Rand Paul's doing pretty well, too. Dr. Rand Paul, Dr. Robert Marshall. The doctors know. They know this guy's a fraud because they're doctors. And they know that he only has a medical degree. So these people are all probably vastly more qualified. I know Rand Paul is vastly better educated and vastly more qualified than Dr. Fascist, who only has a basic medical degree. He's not a virologist. Contrary to popular belief, he's not a virologist. He's not even a microbiologist. He has no specialized training. He's got a GP. He's got a basic medical degree. All right. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, a basic medical degree is pretty good. But I'm just saying, if you're going to be hold the highest government office in the land for infectious diseases, you know, which are a virus, it'd be nice if the person running the infectious disease virology place actually was a virologist. That would be a decent qualification for holding the office. And, of course, he's never been one. He's never aspired to that because he's a paper-pushing, you know, genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious vaccine drug pusher. There we go. That probably came out too fast on the microphone. I might have to slow that down. So Marshall tweets, breaking, I obtained Dr. Fauci's previously unpublished financial disclosures. Dr. Fauci was completely dishonest about his disclosures, obviously. The guy's a compulsive liar. So let's add that too. So let's, all right, this is going to keep growing. Genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher, Dr. Fascist. Whew. Okay. So this, now I don't think this is it. I think the guy's probably got about 50 million stashed. Okay. So they found 10 million. I bet you there's another 40 million in a combination of Swiss banks and Cayman Island banks. Don't think for a second that's it. The guy's been at this for 50 years. You know, he's got to have more than $10 million. No. That's only the start. All right. Anyway, so the article says the Matthews Pacific Tiger Fund fact sheet published in September 2021 revealed the fund has invested 42.7%, that's almost half, for those of you who try to do math, of its investors' money into companies in China and Hong Kong. Well, Hong Kong makes sense. China, it's a communist country. So I'm still trying to understand how a communist country has an investment portfolio. Okay, can you know? I mean, how? So the government's communist. The companies, obviously, they're communist too, but they're operating on a capitalist base run by a communist country. See, this is why I think the communists in our country, you know, want to turn us into China because they look, it works for China. Well, they got great social control. They've got social credits. You know, they have right thinking, right behavior is rewarded. Wrong thinking and wrong behavior is punished. Kind of like Star Trek on Triskelion. Look it up. You know, I love throwing in Star Trek references, but that's where we are. So they love China. So look, you can be capitalist and communist. And look, it works. So that's their model. Yeah, it's the most oppressive society the world's ever known. You know, there's other problems too. That being the big one. But yeah, that's why they model China. The basketball owner, I think, of the Oakland, the Golden State Warriors, who said, I don't care about the Uyghurs. They don't count. They don't mean anything. You know, the entire religious minority in China is being slaughtered. He's like, you know, cost of doing business, no problem. So there's your big tech, big business people. All right. So the article says among the companies listed in the is the enterprise named Wuxi, WXI, Wuxi Biologics, Cayman. Wait a minute. Wuxi Biologics, Cayman, C-A-Y-M-A-N, as in Cayman Islands. They told you she's got stuff on the islands. Sorry, they're calling it Wuxi Biologics, Cayman. Headquartered in China, the Wuxi Biologics Cayman is in the pharmaceutical business. Yeah, let's look and see where they are. Wuxi Biologics Cayman, the website states the enterprise is the leading global open access biologics technology platform offering end-to-end solutions, as opposed to beginning-to-end solutions, end-to-end solutions to empower organizations to discover, develop, and manufacture biologics from concept to commercial manufacturing. So it is from beginning to end, not end-to-end, you idiots. God, I have to write your own advertising material. Things I do here. All right. With a total estimated capacity of exceeding 43,000 liters for biopharmaceutical production planned after 2024 in China, Ireland, the U.S., Germany, and Singapore, Wuxi, W-U-X-I, so it is Wuxi Biologics, will provide its biomanufacturing partners with a robust and premier quality global supply chain network. Of what? Coronavirus? Wait a minute. 430, that's half a million liters of stuff. Yeah, I mean, how many vaccine doses is that? 50 trillion? I don't know. Half a million liters is a lot of liters. You ever seen a 2-liter bottle? I mean, how many vaccines do you think are in a 2-liter bottle? You know, 100? How many vaccine vials? Let's say 100. So now we're talking about, what, 5 trillion? 5 trillion vaccine bottles, which is probably about 20 trillion vaccine doses. I have no idea. It's a lot of stuff. All right. The fund's additional investments into China and Hong Kong include Tencent Holdings. Well, we know about them. Alibaba. But did you know the names? You know, Alibaba. You know, TikTok. These people spend, they probably spend like $500,000 on consultants just to pick their names. Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing. Okay. Outside of the Matthews Pacific Trade Tiger Fund, Fauci reported $10.4 million financial investments, include stakes in Atlas Large Cap Mutual Funds, PIMCO's Investment Grade Bond Fund, and the PAX Elevate Global Women's Leadership Fund. I don't know what the hell it is, which invests into business that advance women through gender diverse boards, senior leadership teams, and other policies practices. Well, he's got a lot of money. You know, and it's got a lot of money. He's not disclosing it either. This is money. So I get you one more quick one here. Let's see if I want to deal anymore with Fauci's money. Once I'm done with this, I'll be done with Fauci's money because I don't really care after this. Where's my, come on, guys. Oh, here we go. Doc Marshall. This is the actual senator's website. They call himself Doc Marshall. It's kind of cool. January 15th, 2022, breaking. Senator Marshall proves Fauci lied by obtaining previously unpublished records. U.S. Senator Roger Marshall today, that was the 14th actually, obtained Dr. Anthony Fauci's previously unpublished financial disclosures from the National Institutes of Health. Ooh, now that's interesting. Now who's Fauci screamed at already for disclosing his money? That's what, did anybody get fired? Anybody get fired recently from the National Institute of Health? Has anybody, you know, reported leaving some more time with their family? Anybody get transferred to Greenland? Anybody had their office suddenly closed? You know, anybody been silenced who you normally hear from at the NIH? Some head is going to roll over this. Fauci's vindictive son of a, you know what? You know what he did to Judy Mikovits, you know, stealing her stuff, taking credit for her work, you know, banning her, gag ordering her, and all the other things he did, right? Fauci's a vindictive little monster. And so if his financials were disclosed, somebody is in deep, deep trouble over at the NIH. All right. Anyway, the NIH released the documents to Senator Marshall after a HELP hearing. I'm not sure what HELP means, H-E-L-P. It's probably a code for something. Earlier this week, where Dr. Fauci misled the American people and said, my financial disclosures are public knowledge and have been so. It is totally accessible to you if you want it, to the public. Well, that was a blatant lie. So this is a guy's a pathological, psychopathic liar. He just sat there openly and said, my financials are fully disclosed. Well, apparently they aren't fully disclosed. If you hid $10 million, openly lied to a senator, lied to Congress, that's a felony itself. But of course, the FBI KGB is not going to go to his door because the FBI KGB only goes to the doors of parents who speak against school boards. And James O'Keefe of Project Veritas. Someday probably me too. Like I say, the FBI, if you're going to come raid me, do it while I'm on the air. At least we can talk about it. You know, I'll put you guys on the microphone. Look, I got an extra chair here. So the FBI raiders, designate, come on, sit down. I got you a headset, or we'll just talk. Okay, just, you know, FBI, just you and me, we'll just talk across from each other. And then you can, you know, steal my stuff and put me in handcuffs, whatever else you want to do for telling the truth, you know, the truth squad, the anti-truth squad. So anyway, but maybe I shouldn't talk about it that much. Maybe I might give him ideas. Yeah, maybe I might hold off on that. Anyway, back to Senator and Dr. Marshall. Dr. Fauci lied to the American people. He is more concerned with being a media star and posing for the cover of magazines than he is in being honest with the American people and holding China accountable for the COVID pandemic. Actually, this is a COVID pandemic that has taken the lives of almost 850,000 Americans. I actually hold Dr. Fascist responsible for the pandemic. Okay? It's not that you want to hold China responsible, because he's the one that dealt with China, gave the money to China, did all the work with China. You know, China's not the problem. I mean, China's the problem for a lot of things, but China's not the main problem here. The main problem here is Dr. Fascist. It's Dr. Fascist that banned hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and early cures so he could get his vaccines on the market. Because as I've said before, with an emergency use authorization, you cannot bring in an emergency drug that hasn't been tested, hasn't been approved, hasn't had years of clinical trials and things like that. You can't bring that onto the market unless there's nothing else available. Well, there was something else available. There were several things available. Preventions, treatments, and cures. Vitamin D, C, vitamin D, C. That's an interesting flip. Vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc. Azithromycin for pneumonia, secondary infection, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And then quercetin, which is the non-prescription form of hydroxychloroquine in states that are stupid enough to mandate a prescription for a simple, safe, over-the-counter drug. That's safer than aspirin. And aspirin's over-the-counter, okay? Yes, true. Hydroxychloroquine is safer than aspirin. Safer than Tylenol, too, by the way. Tylenol causes some interesting problems. I'll have to talk about that at some point. Yeah, I wanted to show on vaccine addiction. You know, I was thinking about this Sunday. I'm driving around for the day job. I'm thinking, I wonder how many people are so paranoid, so filled with fear, that they're taking multiple vaccines from multiple places, and they're actually getting vaccine overdoses. I'm going to talk to Chansey about that tomorrow, but I'm kind of curious. All right, let's move on. We've got Shelby's going to join us here anytime, so hopefully she'll be here soon. I've got, what do I want to cover next? Well, let me start this one. This one's going to be a future show, too. This is sent in by one of our Action Radio friends. It's from the Free West Media website. This is in England. This is going to happen here, too. Watch. Actually, no, it's from Paris. I'm sorry. It's from French lawyer Carlo Alberto Brusa. Sounds like an Italian French lawyer. This is from Paris. Life insurer refuses to cover vaccine death. Think about that. Remember back about 10, 20 years ago when we were all after the insurance companies because they wouldn't cover our operations? They said it was a pre-existing condition, therefore it wasn't their responsibility. Well, everybody has a pre-existing condition. It's called your genetics. So the idea that you can't insure people because of a pre-existing condition, I understand their point of view. They don't want to insure people who suddenly wait until they need a serious operation, you know, pay for insurance right before the operation, get the insurance company to pay for the operation, and then cancel the insurance right after the operation after it's paid for. Okay, I understand that. That's wrong. That should not happen. I'm not sure what you do about that other than, you know, but the idea that you can just withhold treatment or, I mean, withhold payments for something that was a pre-existing condition when pretty much everything we get that's serious is you know, genetically caused. So everything is a pre-existing condition. Anyway. Life insurer refuses to cover COVID vaccine death. Listen to this and tell me if this doesn't shock the hell out of you. An explosive case is currently being hotly debated on social media. In France, a rich, older entrepreneur, so I think that's a French word too, entrepreneur, from Paris, is said to have died as a result of the corona injection, which we, you know, which y'all know is the jab, right? Previously, he had taken out a multi-million dollar life insurance policy for the benefit of his children and grandchildren, and this is according to a media report. And it says, although vaccination is recognized as the cause of death by doctors. So they actually stated on his, you know, death certificate, vaccination. What killed him? The vaccine killed him. All right. And the insurance company has refused to pay out. The reason is because the side effects of corona jabs are known and published. In other words, it's his fault. He took, even though it's mandated, right? It's his fault. He took the jab. He should have known better. The side effects, including death, are known. It's his problem, not ours. We're not going to pay the life insurance claim because he did something risky and experimental. Right? That's what they're arguing. The article says they argue that the deceased took part in an experiment at his own risk. COVID-19 in itself is not classed as a critical illness. Let me say that again. COVID-19 in itself is not classified as a critical illness. Well, why is it not classified as a critical illness? Because it's not dangerous to 99.95% of the people. That's why. COVID-19 isn't the problem here. It's the government pandemic that's the problem. The lockdowns, the closures, the school closures, you know, the mandates, the vax mandates, the vaccines themselves, everything the government has done to healthy people in this country, that's the pandemic. The screwing up of the records, the censoring of the truth, everything that's happened, you know, the misclassification of everything, all that kind of stuff, that's what's going on. I think Alan's actually a little bit early. Shelby's not here yet. Looks like the Skype line is active. So let me she's there too. This is going to be really fun. Hey, Alan, is that you? Are you live here?
Yeah. Alan? Good morning, Action Radio from Belize.
All right, good. Now Shelby just freaked out because Shelby doesn't know. I didn't tell her that you were coming on this morning. So Shelby's like, oh no, Alan Dawson's on the line. Hey, Shelby, Alan Dawson's on the line. Shelby's on the line too. So let me play Shelby's theme. I got a theme for you too, dude. But so let me play Shelby's theme. I'm going to bring you both on together. We're going to have a little fun this morning.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
So I got a surprise for you, Shelby. Ellen Dawson's on the line from Belize.
I'm so happy to hear it. Hi, Alan from Belize. How are you?
Hey, Shelby. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. I'm excited. I'm just happy to hear that voice again.
That's so fun. Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you so much for inviting him at the same time. What a great connection. It's been so many years since I got to see Alan in person.
Well, that's why I did it. Now, Alan's becoming a regular when he can. I've got a Friday slot, Friday, 6 o'clock in the morning my time, so 7 o'clock Eastern. And so he was on last Friday, and when he can, he comes on, but he's still tour guiding. He's still doing all kinds of things. So if I'll let you guys chat for a little bit, and then we'll get to Shelby. We can get your report. We got about half an hour. And Alan, of course, you're welcome to stay as long as you want, depending on how much time you have, too. But I just figured I'd let you guys chat for a bit and catch up. And so if you have, Shelby, you got questions on what's going on in Belize, we find out all the time. In fact, Pianki usually calls in to get what the latest dinner is. Hysterical what happens here. But so it's wonderful that Alan's become a real part of the show now too. So yeah, if you guys want to chat a bit, feel free.
Well, terrific. So tell us, fill me in, what is happening with Belize? I mean, I really don't know. We haven't been cruising there, and I don't know what the status is for COVID, but tell me, fill us in.
They are back. They have been back since July of last year when we got our first cruise since COVID. And it's picking up, I tell you. It is picking up. But surprisingly, we had two cancellations for the rest of the month and February, and they'll be back in March, I heard. I think it's from Royal Caribbean. But, people have been coming, Shelby, fully vaccinated. They've been coming, and it's been a good experience. There are a few bubble tours that are running, and those seems to be working out fine, too. Those are the unvaccinated people, people with kids most of the time, I guess. But, I have still been doing guiding differently now. I'm just doing guiding in Belize City, going around Belize City for the Our City Tour on a little open-air trolley train ride. So that's what I do now for the last, let's see, next month will be 4 years with them.
Okay, so you're doing open air trolley rides to Belize City.
Yeah, I work along with a company called Calypso Train Tours. I don't know if you ever heard of them or seen them around the city.
I have.
I work with them now, yeah.
Okay,
Shelby,
when
was the last time you were here? You were here just for a short visit, and I think you met Leah at the Radisson or something?
Yes, I do recall. I think that was probably the last time I was there. It's possible we had gone a few times since, but I probably didn't get off the ship because I was working. But I remember seeing, it went to Leah. We went to coffee. We had a nice coffee together. It was definitely nice to have a little time to just hang out instead of always being such a rush working with all the passengers, because we had very big groups when we worked with you. We had a lot of big groups, like 50, 60, 100 people that would go on tour with your company back in the day. So I know every time used to get together, it was so stressful for me, but you guys always calmed me down and got everybody all set. And, it was always so delightful. It was like you guys were saviors. So, recall all of that very well.
Yeah, it's the good old days gone by, huh?
Oh, I know.
Well, Alan
I
calms me down, too. Alan calms me down, too. I'll be all hyper as I usually am, running on overdrive, and Alan's like, calm down, Greg. It's okay. Man, you're going to be fine. Just take it easy. Be like Lise. It'll be okay. So don't take offense at my accent there at Shelby's opening theme, but yeah, that's kind of cool. All right.
So
yeah,
we're going to
a bit, and then we'll get on travel stuff, too. Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
Well, I was going to say, so tell me about the vaccination requirements in Belize. I know it sounds like, all the cruise ship passengers that are 12 and up, I'm aware of that. But what are the vaccination requirements in Belize itself for the citizens?
It's so far voluntary. People are doing it voluntary. They wanted to enact a law to get it to make it mandatory, but it's not going through. So. It's over like 53-54% of the population that's vaccinated now. One or fully vaccinated, and more people are picking up with the boosters now. I personally myself had to be, fully vaxxed to work with the cruise ship again. That's one of the prerequisites to work with that area. I haven't got my booster yet. Matter of fact, I went to get my booster. In all honesty, I don't want it. But in order to keep the job, I have to get it. But I'm actually getting over COVID right now as I speak. I'm out of quarantine this Friday. And then I need retest before I start working again next week. So right now I'm sipping on my ginger, lemongrass, garlic tea with a little touch of lime and sweetened with honey.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah, we're in the same exact boat, you know, I think as you in that respect. And it's what's really kind of frustrating at this point is like seeing everybody that is vaxxed get it and sometimes even getting sicker, even though they say people don't. That's been very frustrating. And now that they're really pushing it, I said to everybody that my friends, I'm like, you know, it's one thing when I had to do cruises and, you know, that was just part of the course. It's kind of what, unfortunately, my decision I had to make for my job, but I don't like how they're throwing it down everyone's throat because everyone's getting sick anyway. Like,
yeah.
It just doesn't make sense, you know? I'm not feeling like I'm confident about this. So anyway, that's where we're at, but that's interesting information.
But I tell you what, you got to wear your mask if you're in Belize. If you're walking around anywhere, entering any public places outside, you got to wear your mask. There is a $250 U.S. fine if you're not having it properly worn over your nose, covering your chin. So you got to wear a mask if you're coming to Belize, all right?
Wow. See, and we're not doing any of that in Florida at all. And as I said to my girlfriend, you know, I would be fine with wearing K95 masks 2 years ago if everyone was wearing them properly. But now that we're 2 years into it and almost everyone has been exposed, had it, or, you know, obviously
yeah.
does not fit it, it seems a little bit like the cat's out of the bag, so to speak. And I'm like, you know,
yeah.
this seems to be a little bit ridiculous, like that we're now, and now they're trying to get us to do K95s everywhere, which, like I said, 2 years ago, I would have been all about it. But now I'm like, seriously, it's been through the house. We're fine. Everyone's like vaccinated, shot up, booster shotted. Like, Jesus, like, it doesn't make sense. So I don't know. But that's interesting to share. Anyway, those are just I don't have any control over what they do. But, you know, just sharing my thoughts on it. Anyway, let's talk about cruises because we are going cruising. We're doing a February cruise. It is not going to Belize, but it's on Celebrity, and it's a chartered ship with Temptations, which is one of the most wildest companies I've ever traveled with. They chartered a ship, and we have a group of singles on board, and it's tops optional at the pool. And for the record, I keep my top on because I'm working. but it is
not. Well, wait a minute. Inquiring minds want to know, Shelby, if you weren't working, would you drop the top?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always tell people I'm definitely not conservative. However, when it comes to a business setting or if I'm going to have clients around, then I'm definitely not comfortable. But I have in the past when my husband and I were younger and we were at European beaches, you know, we were in Barcelona, we were in France, and tops optional.
Nobody knew who you were.
Nobody knew who I was, right. And
yeah.
I didn't know even how to speak the language. So just a big hat and glasses. You know, definitely my husband and I over the years have absolutely frequented beaches like that with tops optional. And I'm happy to be a part of the fun. But in this case, it's
just
more of a...
immersing yourself in the culture, right, Shelby? Do what they do.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Hey, Shelby, I've got a question.
Yeah.
Hey, Shelby, I'm single now. Can I join one of them single crews?
Of course, as long as you're vaccinated. Yes, we'd love to have you. Come in February. It's going to be wild, Alan. But yeah, it's definitely a great time. These people are absolutely hilarious. I think it's probably the only time in my life I've been around people where they are more than, like, usually when I'm dancing or having a really good time or really kind of letting my hair down, I'm the one that sort of sticks out, and I don't mean to attract attention, but that's just my excitement and my energy sort of attracts attention. So I have to sort of pull it down a notch. But in this case, these people that are gravitated to this company, they're so outrageous that I'm just like a nothing, and it's great. I'm like, I love being a fly on the wall and being the least, like, the least crazy. So I'm really excited to do this cruise. It's on Valentine's Day. And, yes, you're absolutely welcome on any of our cruises. We're doing these wild cruises, we only have two of them planned, and then the rest are European river trips, river cruises. We will have some more cruises on the we have a Virgin Voyages, adults only, out of Miami. I don't think they're hitting Belize yet either. But why would you want to go back to Belize? You live there.
I want to go back to Belize. In fact, I want to do, as soon as you guys lift your vaccine mandate and mask mandates, I'm going to talk to Shelby and you, Alan, and see if we can get a week there. I want to broadcast from there for a week and just immerse ourselves in the culture. And I might even go topless too. I mean, who knows, right? So it should be, it could be, but I think it'd be fabulous for Action Radio and fabulous for all of our folks. And hopefully it'll be fabulous for Belize too. So
right.
We'll see what happens, but that's in my plans here for the future. So yeah, and you guys, you know, you're both Facebook friends of mine, so you guys can talk to each other anytime and communicate. Feel free, but so that's good. But you're always welcome to join each other's reports as far as I'm concerned. Tuesdays on at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, and Alan's on at 6 o'clock. That'd be 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central on Fridays. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So you come on. He comes on a little early on Fridays. Okay, very good.
Not every Friday.
Well,
yeah, not every Friday. It just depends on his schedule, but I just keep the time open just in case. Yep.
I'll be on this Friday, apparently, because that's going to be the end of my quarantine day.
Yeah, so this is kind of crazy, though, that you've got – are there any statistics – is Belize keeping statistics on the fact that you had a vaccine mandate, so you had to get two shots plus a booster. You got COVID anyway. Are they recording that? Are they keeping any kind of numbers to see how many people are vaccinated with COVID versus vax-free with COVID? What's going on, Alan?
No, they do. They do. They're keeping numbers on it. And actually, there's a COVID update every day that you can see or view on the news. You can hear it. You can see it on the TV news from the time it started right up until now. How many have been vaccinated? How many have died? How many have recovered? What's not?
Do they divide how many have?
Are they keeping record of? Yeah. Are they like so? Something that I really find, I guess, frustrating as a science major is that they never seem to give us exactly the information that we really want, which is, number one, if they died, did they have comorbidities? If they died, was it from actual COVID or was it from something else that they had? If they died, were they unvaccinated? Were they vaccinated? I feel like that kind of information is very hard to get with these stats. And I don't, and it should be very, very transparent because these are all what we would make good decisions going forward on, right? But all they say is death. Do they get more specific and granular within Belize?
I think that's one of the things I will be going after when it's all over. That's what I'm going to be digging for.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the frustrating part here at this point, too, because it's become, especially in the news, it's become so frustrating that they give you almost all the information, but not. And then, and social media, which, you know, I run social media businesses. I do a lot of social media marketing for different types of businesses. It's been very frustrating that they've taken down information that should not be taken down. It's not an opinion. It's someone's experience. For example, if someone experienced something where they got COVID and they were vaccinated and boosted and sicker than the unvaccinated friend that got COVID. Like, I'd like to know that, but that's always seems to be buried or retracted or, you know, in
hidden.
Some doctors' cases, you know, just deplatformed, which it's like, well, that's not really a conversation or science if you just completely censor the other side. So that's becoming way more apparent to me over the last 6 months or so, and by this time we should have the data. And a doctor in Maine, but she's been practicing 30 or 40 years successfully, and like very well renowned in the community. And because she gave her patients ivermectin, they've taken her license away and they're giving her a psych evaluation. And I find that to be shocking and scary, and seems to be the norm now when doctors are treating patients with something that they believe is helpful, that is definitely not harmful. So this whole idea that these doctors should be deplatformed, delicensed, like that's very concerning. And I think it should be concerning for everybody that, you know, if a doctor over 30 or 40 years has information that might help another get that might help someone sick. And hey, maybe they're right. Maybe ivermectin isn't going to work. But hell, if it doesn't hurt, what the hell is the harm? You know, like we're you know, not we're losing people.
It actually
and
does
doing
work.
Any treatment.
It actually does.
And it might.
I
would agree that the studies that I've seen secretly show that they do, but these studies are not being allowed to be promoted publicly. In fact, mm-hmm. they're doing everything they can to stop it, which is really my point is if you're going to do everything you can to stop something from getting out, then most likely it's the truth because people don't work that hard at hiding something that doesn't work.
Yeah. Did the article say how many of the patients that were given ivermectin, you know, recovered quickly and are back to their normal lives?
The only thing it really focused on was the fact that she gave it out and then her license was taken away and they're
right.
evaluating her in a psych evaluation like she's crazy.
All right. Think about that, though. If they didn't what the result was with the patients, you know, I'm willing to bet those patients did just fine. I'm willing to bet they're...
Well, that's
they're,
the thing. I mean, when they're hiding the most important information, which is
exactly.
very, very concerning. And
mm-hmm.
it makes me feel like, well, this could definitely have been now, you know, 2 years later. It's like, seriously, this
mm-hmm.
is where we're at with our
yeah.
our transparency?
Well, I can explain it really simply. COVID was created as a marketing tool to scare the hell out of people, to kill enough people to terrify the rest, and to sell vaccines. I mean, this is what this is all about. And the reason that we have this emergency use authorization for vaccines, when there was something perfectly viable available, in other words, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. See, the way the law works is you can't give an emergency authorization if you have a safe, approved, you know, regular treatment available. So what they had to do is they made the regular treatment that was available, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D3, C, and zinc, they made those illegal. So they made the legal cures, the approved cures, illegal so they could make their illegal cures legal. So they reversed everything. And so nothing can enter the narrative. People can't think that you can get COVID after you've been vaccinated. People can't think that there are early treatments and there are recoveries. You can't interview the hundreds of thousands of people that are alive and healthy today that got hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, various other combinations of drugs and therapies that many doctors across the country are prescribing. You can't know that because that would defeat the narrative that all roads lead to vaccines, that salvation is in the vaccine, that the only way out of this is with the vaccine. But this is the longest pandemic in history. And if you go back to the first hour, I pulled out my old, you know, July 2020 chart from the CDC, the last honest chart they had, and the death rate for COVID in July of 2020 was heading for zero. It was about 300 on July 4th, and it was heading for zero. Okay? Everything after that is a lie. That's when it became the government pandemic. And the proof of it, they don't interview the folks that were successfully treated. They don't let these treatments go forward. They don't report how many people are successfully doing fine after ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. They don't report how many people who have been vaccinated got COVID. They don't report how many people who are vax-free like me have not had COVID or at least hasn't been documented yet. You know, I mean, they don't report how many people are naturally immune. They don't report herd immunity. They don't report anything. There's no informed consent. This is the biggest problem here. There's no informed consent. So therefore, you cannot consent to a vaccine. It's not even a vaccine. It's a messenger RNA instruction for your body. It's gene therapy. You can't consent
right.
to that because you're not being informed properly.
That's a really important
thing. That's the problem.
I don't agree with everything Greg thinks, nor this hypothesis particularly.
No, that's fine.
But,
yeah.
but there are some things in what you said I do agree with, and I'll focus on that. But one of the things that you know, you say that makes a lot of sense is there isn't informed consent. We're not being informed. And I have to say, I've mm-hmm. done some serious research on ivermectin, and one thing I find freaking offensive is that the CDC has tweeted sarcastic remarks. Sarcastic. I don't need sarcasm from our CDC. Like, I don't even need it from someone on Facebook that I'm serving. Like, I don't like sarcasm. I don't feel like it's very helpful. And unless you're really making a joke, it's not funny. And the CDC had this super sarcastic remark when ivermectin became pretty popular, that whole idea that ivermectin might work a couple, I don't know, 6 months ago or so. I mean, I know Greg's been talking about it since the beginning, by the way. He has had his finger on the pulse. But when the public started talking about it, like when Joe Rogan took it,
mm-hmm.
they had this very sarcastic remark saying that it was, you're not a horse, you don't take horse dewormer. And that is just, it is so uneducated, that that whole statement. First of all, sarcasm, there's no place for that in CDC at all. And second of all, it's not true, which is horrible because it isn't true. It was first made for humans, and it had a Nobel Prize Peace Award, and he didn't take the horse dewormer. So that whole idea that they are on social media, which is where I come in, right, and where I'm my expertise lies, like the fact that that messaging is being put out, and that's what people are, their takeaway is. So whenever you say ivermectin, they think, oh, you're an idiot. You're an idiot who takes horse dewormer. That is so far from the truth, not to mention that everyone that I know that has taken it swears that there has been some sort of change in their body very quickly after that. So
the vaccine you're talking about, or ivermectin? Just to be clear.
Ivermectin
brought a change? Okay.
Yes, that's what I've been told by friends that I know have taken it. So don't, that's all the studying I'm doing. I'm not trying to claim any medical
good change,
you know,
bad change. What kind of change?
Good change. Yeah, they okay, swear good. That it made a difference. You know, they
just want to clarify.
Say it made a difference. However, you know, I have heard people say otherwise too, but neither one have I heard on the news, because it's like they're burying everything that has anything to do with it, which is, again, not science. You have to have the opposing side in order to find out what works.
Yeah.
So these types of antics really upset me. It especially upsets me that it's not available to people to try if they want, because it's not something that's hurting them. So there really shouldn't be this whole, you know, they take it off the market. You can't even get it in Mexico. We tried in certain places. They've not even allowed you to get it anymore, which, again, is nerve-wracking, because it shouldn't be like this. And I also have a good knowledge that they gave it to a bunch of people in India, their little kits. They had it in their little kits, ivermectin and a few other things, and, you know, zinc and the vitamin D, and I think hydroxychloroquine as well, but don't quote me on that. And they are also saying that I'm trying to find more information, but it's come out that this area in India that they gave it to seems to be COVID-free. However, again, in social media and in Google, I'm seeing a lot of buried information, which...
No, we covered it. It's
that,
especially the P, I've forgotten the name of the state, we can look it up. But the population is close to the United States. It's like 300 million people in this one Indian province. And it's virtually COVID-free. Hydroxychloroquine is a malaria preventive, and ivermectin is, I think, prevents things like river blindness, you know, parasites. So in fact, you know, technically as a dewormer, that's another one of the effects. It does remove parasites from your body. It also removes dangerous viruses. You know, so it does a lot of really good things. And it's fascinating. But just to bring back to travel.
Why would you stop people allowing, even if it didn't work, why would you stop people from being able to have access
to
it if they wanted it?
They
and
have
that,
to.
That
to sell vaccines.
The biggest red flag. It's just,
no,
right.
No, that's why, because ivermectin is an approved, FDA-approved drug, as is hydroxychloroquine. They've been approved 50 or 60 years, okay? But they have to get those off the market, because those make their vaccines illegal. You cannot have an emergency use authorization for a vaccine if hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin work. So they have to say they don't work. They have to make a doctor seem to be mentally unstable for even prescribing it.
Exactly.
And when you say just try it, it's not just trying it. These are prescribed by doctors, a lot of whom have more qualifications than Dr. Fascist. I got Pianki on the line, too. I want to get him on. Shelby, I don't know how much time you have. And Alan, I want to thank you for calling in, too. Let's get Pianki real quick. I want to bring him back to travel, because travel is suffering with all this misinformation. You want to talk about misinformation? Travel industry. And these countries are suffering horribly by the people that can't go because of all the misinformation, the vax mandates, the mask, the whole bit. Pianki, you got a question for Shelby or Alan from Belize? Pianki?
Well, good morning. How are you this morning?
Morning. Great time.
Good morning.
Alan, morning. I'll give you a few seconds, Alan, to tell me what's for dinner, but I belong to...
I knew that was coming.
Greg, I have a requirement for those that want to date me. They have to have a passport that's blank, no entries in. No vaccine. If you got a vaccine, you move on.
Would you go topless in Shelby's, Temptations Cruise?
Temptation Cruise. Oh, that's a good one.
No, it's a company called Temptation. Find out more about this. Shelby, in fact, if you can bring him on the air, that'd be great. Let's get this company on here. Let's find out. I want to meet people that are crazier than you, because that means they're crazier than me.
And that's
a scary thought. What was that, Shelby?
No.
You have to come on the cruise to meet the people that are crazier than me.
Okay. I can do that. As soon as your mandates are over with.
That'll be hilarious. Alan, what's for dinner today? Make it good.
Hey, conch soup. Conch soup for lunch.
Oh, that sounds good and light. Mm-hmm. That sounds good and light, Greg. We have to hurry up and fly down.
Well, as soon as the mandates are over, I'm planning. In fact, Shelby's going to help us coordinate Alan, too. We're going to get tours of Belize, I think. We're going to have a great time. So we'll, you know, be Action Radio live from Belize. You know, as soon as you guys open up your country, you know, for the rest of it. Oh, yeah. Shelby's already, I'm sure, thinking about this, going, this is a fun idea. Let's bring the Temptation folks, too. We can combine a cruise and a trip to Belize. We'll sort of, you know, throw them all together.
Yay.
I love it. Sounds great. One thing I wanted to mention before I got off the call today, because I think it's pretty important and you probably have some info about it. I'm sure you've heard of the Canadian mandates. They're locked down again in Ontario. Yep. And it's my understanding that the truckers are planning something in the 23rd of January. They're going to start the 23rd of January, they're supposed to be starting their migration to circle the capital and basically I think stop traffic, so to speak, until the mandates are over, or as a sign that the mandate, because now they're requiring truckers be vaccinated, and I guess that they don't want, some of them don't
want
to be, only 50% are.
These are people that drive by themselves in a cab, you know, with the windows up in the frozen wasteland of Canada, you know, across thousands of miles of highways where they don't come in contact with anybody on the road, and they have to be vaccinated? That's insane. Do they have to wear a mask in the truck too?
I really don't know. That's a very good question. Unfortunately, that's a very good question.
Don't count on it.
But yeah,
this is Canada.
It's the old Canada. So we'll see if they've had enough. I don't know. Again, the majority of Canadians I know happen to think all the lockdowns are very good ideas, and it's for their safety, and everything is good, which is shocking to me, because like the whole of North America is definitely not reacting the same way Canada is, and we're fine.
Are there any studies to prove that they work? Are there any studies, Shelby, in Canada
that
lockdowns do anything?
The degree of isolation that they have implemented in Canada would work. I mean, they seriously have not let people out of their houses for 2 years, and that's not a joke. They haven't even been able to go to stores. And in fact, anything that they could do for stores was essential items only, and it was curbside delivery only. And they didn't, you know, they have been so isolated. And in some respects, in the beginning, like here, I'm a pretty reasonable person, and I also understand that things are not done super efficiently in the beginning. So in the beginning, I kind of understood, especially with Canada, because of socialized medicine, not exactly like Italy, but still, when you have socialized medicine, you don't have enough hospitals for a pandemic. And
but you also
can
deny treatment if you don't follow the policy of government too. That's the problem with socialized medicine.
I'm not a big fan of socialized medicine. However, I can understand them saying it'll cost the government more to treat people than it would for just to have them stay home and give them money, which is what they did. They gave them $2,000 a month, and they said stay home. And that's fine in the beginning, but I mean, we're 2 years in, and there's no one that should believe at this point, especially since they've already rolled out vaccinations, and assuming the vaccinations work or help
expand
the hospital. That's the information they're giving us, so that's what I'm saying is the information we're getting. If they're at least stopping us from dying, then that's great. Then, it's time to get on with our lives. And as many people, what I've been trying to educate people this weekend on was that this is here to stay, and we have to stop acting as if there's zero tolerance for COVID. That's bizarre and ridiculous and just reckless in our mental health and it's the risk outweighs reward when we're locking people in 2 years later after vaccines, boosters, and the majority of everyone has been in contact with it in one way or another. This is here to stay. People have to stop acting as if vaccines are going to eradicate it, because there isn't technology for that with this type of virus. And when they say the words polio and smallpox, I want to shake someone, because it is bizarrely misinformed. Polio is like a bacterial thing, so totally different. And then the vaccines are totally different, because they're not even a little bit of what the problem is. It's a completely different messenger vaccine. They shouldn't even be called a vaccine. And then there's the whole part that, you know, it's kind of vaccine that's got host animal host. So it's not going to be eradicated. It's going to transfer. And we're just going to try to keep up with it like the flu vaccine that never seems to work anyway. So this whole idea that we can eradicate it has to stop. And people have to understand that this virus is going to be given to our grandchildren and our children's grandchildren. So that's where I think the whole mindset mentality needs to change, is you have to stop thinking we're going to have zero COVID. That's not going to happen. We're going to have to live with this, whether or not you get vaccinated or not. That's my two cents.
No, you're absolutely right. But we do show how dangerous the lockdowns are. Lockdowns are far more dangerous than the actual COVID. Anyway, Alan, why don't you go ahead? I've got Jill in the line next. I've got Kyle from Sacramento calling in. We got Pianchi somewhere in the Midwest or New Orleans. We'll find out which. We're across the whole country today and international, so we've got an interesting show.
Yeah, my heart to you, Alan. It was so nice to hear your voice and to interact, and I hope I get to see you soon. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Bye-bye for now, guys.
Thanks, Shelby.
Bye-bye, Shelby. Yeah, it was good to be on with Shelby for a little bit there. She is definitely fabulous.
Oh, yeah, and you can stick around. You don't have to leave. You can stay around for the rest of the show if you want. We've got folks coming on. We got Josie on. Josie, I think, has a friend coming on. We got Kyle from Sacramento to get to. I'm just going to play Josie's theme, and we will be, as soon as I find it here, right back. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border, from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey. Of course, it helps if I make your line live in mine, too. There we go. Good morning, Josie.
Hey, good morning, Greg. Good morning, everyone. Pasta this morning.
Well, a lot. We still got Alan from Belize. He's still on the Skype line, and like I said, I'll get to Kyle in a bit once we get into your report. But what's going on? What's happening?
I was listening to him. I don't have a lot since I have a guest coming quickly. I just wanted to report that a small group of 150 caravan from Honduras tried to enter Guatemala a couple days ago, but believe it or not, they were stopped by immigration and local police, and they grabbed them and sent them back. And I was like, I don't know what's going on, because usually they let them right through. And everybody has an idea, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a journalist in Tijuana was murdered, gunned down. And I think the cartels are behind this one. So a lot of the reporters and a lot of the journalists are a little bit hostile, afraid about it, for them to
be
there,
reporting on?
You know.
What was the journalist reporting on, you know?
They think this guy was reporting something that he wasn't supposed to. They're not saying exactly that he had three big pieces of paper reporting lies. And this guy's been a reporter for 22 years. His name is Margarito Martinez Esquivel. And like I say, he was a professional journalist for 22 years, and it just happened that he was in Tijuana, Mexico, and he was gunned down. It's very sad because, you know, they're trying to report what's going on, you know, and for this to happen, like when we had the big revolution in Nicaragua, a lot of the reporters were being murdered, and an American, and it was a mess back then in the 80s. But it's happening everywhere. People don't want to hear the truth. They want to shut down for the people that they're giving the real news, and that's what's happening right now. So the journalists in Mexico right now, they're there now from other countries. They're a little bit afraid, and they're putting a complaint about this situation right now in Mexico.
But, was this American journalist, or was he reporting for Mexican media, or who was he reporting to? Do you know more details?
He was reporting for the for Mexico, yeah, in
okay.
Spanish. Yeah.
Was he a Mexican mm-hmm. citizen or American?
To be honest with you?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Because he's an American citizen,
yeah.
That's an international incident. That's something that Brandon should do something about. He won't, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that normally, you know, if Trump were in office and Mexico was killing an American journalist, this would be an international incident. This would be all over the news, and Trump would make it all over the news.
Exactly.
The fact that it's happening under Brandon, I think, is very indicative. But if it's not an American citizen, it's different. It's really up to Mexico to take care of it. And they can't even take care
yeah.
of the cartels, let alone the journalists.
Yeah.
So I don't expect a lot to happen there. But I want to get to Alan for a second, because you've raised an interesting point. The caravans in Guatemala, they don't want them. And I'm curious, Alan, what's going on with the caravans?
No.
Are they passing through Belize, by Belize? Are they leaving you guys alone? Is it not part of the path? Or have you sort of said, or has your military said, don't come here, we don't want you? What's going on?
They've never come this way, because what they do, they head straight out of Guatemala into Mexico. Coming
okay.
through Belize would be like a bypass. What we do mm-hmm. have a problem with here off and on are the border jumpers.
What's that? What's a border jumper?
Oh, those are just people from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. They try to get into Belize illegally. So they walk, or they catch the transport, and they
mm-hmm.
walk closer to the border, and they swim across the rivers. But,
oh, that sounds familiar. ours is the Rio Grande. What's your river called? Which river? I'm just curious. I may look up on a map sometime. I guess it's the division of Belize from Honduras, or Belize from Guatemala?
No. That's the one that separates Belize with Guatemala.
Okay.
I don't
got
know
it.
What the river is. I don't remember the name of that river across on their side, but then it becomes our old Belize River. That's the same river.
Okay, makes sense.
Hey,
all right.
Hey,
yeah.
The reason they skip Belize is because they don't know how to swim. I'm just kidding.
let me get
it's a lot of water.
Let me get a comment from Piaki, and then I want to go to Kyle, and then it looks like I think your guest is here, Josie. So
good morning, Kyle. Good morning, Bianchi.
Oh, Kyle's not here. Well, I'll make Kyle's line live. Let's go to Piaki, then Kyle, then your guest.
Josie has a
yeah. They should get some of those.
Hold on.
They should get some of those RC remote control alligators. That'll keep them out of the river.
Yeah. Drone watch. Drones with big speakers.
You're funny. Yeah.
Kyle from
Bianchi,
oh,
you always
ahead,
come out with some good ones.
Oh. Bianchi's hysterical. For those of you that aren't listening to the show regularly,
she is.
Because we get Josie and we get Bianchi on the show together. It's dangerous around here. Kyle from Sacramento, California. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kyle.
What you got?
Good morning.
Kyle.
All I have to report here is it's unbelievable how only Democratic cities are wearing masks. I travel into the foothills where independents or Republicans live, and no one's wearing a mask. Only Democrats. So it's just showing me just clearly how different the parties are and think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's two Americas. You know, you've got Marxist America, where people are wearing masks. They have huge mandates, and they have income tax. I made a point this just the other day on Facebook, that you look at the free states, Texas, Florida, some of the other states that don't have an income tax. They're more prosperous than the states that have an income tax, which is why I think we need to dump the federal income tax. And you look at the economies of Texas and Florida, you know, where we're free states, where we're not locking everybody down. We're not masking everybody up. We're not closing the schools. We're living like Americans instead of Marxists. You know, it's a totally different world. So, but California, which people don't realize about California, that Kyle's pointing out, is that California is split too. You've got the leftists have taken over the nice beachfront property, you know, so much for global warming. But you've got Northern California and Redding, which wanted to join at one point. I'm not sure if they still do. A new state of Jefferson with Southern Oregon. You've got the foothills. You've got the Sierras. You know, you've got Tahoe and Truckee and all these wonderful places in the Sierra Nevada mountain range. They're very conservative. And you don't hear about them because the liberals still outnumber the conservatives. Have I got that about right, Kyle? What do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay, let's get to Ann. Let's get to our new guest. So we have a new person joining the show, friend of Josie. So Josie and Ann, you guys can chat, and Josie, why don't you introduce your guest? She's live now, and we're having a fun morning here. I'm really enjoying this. Go ahead, Josie.
Yeah, let me introduce Ann. Ann, she's from Ohio, and we met last year in D.C., not inside the Capitol, outside by the Washington Monument where Trump was giving yes. And it's been a great friendship that we have, and we share a lot of videos and stories and everything. So let me present Ann to you this morning. Good morning, Brett. Good morning.
Good morning, Ann. Welcome to Action Radio.
Good morning, Brett.
So what's your story? Tell me what's going on. Tell me what fun, exciting things you want to bring to our rather all over the place show this morning. Who wants to go? Josie? Ann? Are we still
Ann,
in the air?
Go ahead.
Ann? You're live.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah,
are
maybe text her or something. She should be. Her line's live as far as I'm concerned. I said, Josie, why don't you take a minute, text her.
Right here in my house.
Oh, she is? Well, why don't you sit on put yourselves on speaker and sit on the same phone. Ann, what's wrong with your phone?
What happened? Just talk. Okay. She's here.
Well, I'll tell you what. Josie, all right, so you want to go with January 6th? You want to tell us what you did there? Because I got a million things I can talk about.
Go ahead and share a little bit of your story, your experience in the outside Capitol.
It's just us, Ann. Don't worry about it. We don't have people all around the world listening. There aren't 70 countries that are dropping in, you know, at any time in the podcast. Don't worry about that. It's just us. How am I doing, guys?
Yeah.
I heard that there was going to be a patriotic rally in D.C., so I hopped in my car and drove down there all by myself. Found out that the city was actually closed off. Only two bridges were available to get into the city.
How about that? Or get out of the city.
The hotel I stayed in. The hotel I stayed in, that they had actually shut off all access to any kind of food. You couldn't order carry out or anything. Went to the rally the next morning. It was the most patriotic day I'd ever spent among fellow believers, and saying the Pledge of Allegiance and singing our national anthem and just listening to a bunch of great speakers. Walked to the Capitol building, and all of a sudden...
What time did you walk to the Capitol building? And this is critical. I'll tell you why in a second. Do you remember? Approximately.
Like 12:30, 1 o'clock.
That's when you left
the
Ellipse?
Up to 1, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what time?
We were the very, very first ones at the edge of the sidewalk down at the very front of the Capitol building. There was a gentleman with a bullhorn on the tower.
Yeah, we know about him.
Expecting all of us to come on up to scale the wall, that this was a monumental moment. You should come up and get a selfie. And as people tried to climb the wall or scale the wall, they shot tear gas at us.
Were you affected by the tear gas? Did you get it in your face?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I got hit by it and had to retreat. I had to go back and regain my get some fresh air again. And the whole time I'm sitting there thinking, why is one person instructing us to come on up, get on the, you know, because all the everything was set up for the inauguration, the bleachers and everything. And he was encouraging us to come out and get our picture, you know, part of history. And then the minute somebody would try to do just that, that's when the police were, you know, starting to retaliate.
And it was all caught on video. It was all caught on video. What a surprise. And what was it presented as? You insurrectionists. You were illegally scaling the wall. We didn't hear about the guy with the bullhorn until recently. Okay, so here you are. You're being encouraged. You're being enticed. It's called entrapment. You know, we think that person was an FBI person up there or an informant. Or I'm calling them the FBI KGB now. Okay. We know about Ray Epps. In fact, our own Jonathan Mosley, our attorney, our legal expert here, Jonathan Mosley, who's on Thursdays at 7:30 Central, 8:30 Eastern, it's 5:30 Pacific time for Kyle. He's actually subpoenaed Ray Epps, John Sutherland, I think his name is, this other one, Stuart Rhodes. He's actually subpoenaed who we think the FBI insurgents really are. Okay, that's where this is going. This is why you're saying it's so critical. And we're making.
If you have pictures.
All right, I want to get you. All right, I want to get you in touch with Jonathan because you can probably help out his defendants. You know, anything that you have that's new and different, you know. And you can be careful what you say now. You know, I don't want to get you in trouble, or you can be as controversial as you want. It's really up to you. But these podcasts are recorded and they're permanent, and you know, so this is a permanent record. Josie, go ahead.
Let me tell you, Greg, Anne has some awesome picture that one of the young men he met, he kind of like got very close to the entrance of the Capitol and shared the pictures with her. And they were very good pictures, let me tell you. I just saw them.
Well, let's see if we can get Jonathan. I'll talk to him about it. In fact, I'm going to send him a message right now. So you guys talk. Let me see if I can get Jonathan and see if he has a minute to call in on this. This might be really, really interesting for him.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to comment?
I can connect and with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that. In the meantime, Alan, what have you heard about January 6th? What's the word in Belize? I'm curious how the international press is treating our what we're calling the Democrat insurrection and what I call the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. Alan.
Well,
I hear dogs.
In Belize.
Yeah.
In Belize, we that's the neighbor's dog. In Belize, they just play the main headline stuff on our news. What I know about the January 6th event is all what I saw on my favorite U.S. media, which is NBC. That's the one I look at usually. So all I learned, all I know about it is from NBC. But local media, they would just play like in the news headline when it happens, and they play a few days of it. And that's about it. And then that just blew over.
I'm still typing. You guys take over. Piaki, and then we'll get to Kyle.
I'm sitting here flabbergasted. Keep on talking.
Kyle?
No opinion or anything particular on the subject.
Okay. Well, here's what I want to get to. I call it the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In because, and we've gone over theories, and if you ever get a chance, go back to our January 6th anniversary show with Jonathan and Josie, and then we did it a week later. We sort of recapped. But Jonathan, he's been on CNN. This is big news. This is going to be worldwide because he's subpoenaing the very people. Let's pull the article up real quickly here. Oath Keepers. I found it for the first time. This is unusual. This never happens. Is it the one I want? Hang on. That's not the one I want.
If you want,
yeah.
If you want, I can come.
Did you read her story that I sent you? Because right away she was telling exactly what she saw at the Capitol immediately.
No, I haven't. I didn't get a chance to last night. So here it is. Stuart Rhodes, Ray Epps, John Sullivan. That's the person I'm thinking of. Subpoenaed to testify in the 1/6 Oath Keepers case. This is a national file. Jonathan. Our lawyer here is the one who's defending these people. And so, like I said, this is why we've got to get you guys connected. We'll probably do it off the air. I'm sort of flying by the seat of my pants here right now, texting and talking and probably doing too much. I'll tell Jonathan we got a surprise for him. All right. So, Anne, go ahead, Kyle. You're still on.
It's really obvious when you look back at all the videos they did. They got people caught doing videos of people breaking into the Capitol, like who was using that, from the bullhorn guy to the officers letting everybody in to the fact that they just want to get rid of Trump. I mean, this thing is so obvious. I mean, it's globalists getting rid of JFK. It's globalists wanting to get rid of big power, whatever you want to call it, wanting to get rid of Trump, using it as an angle against him. It's just utterly ridiculous how obvious it is that our country isn't ours. Our media is owned by too many foreign entities, too much globalist power.
Yeah. Yeah, let's and I want to focus a little bit more on the events here of January 6th because this is critical for our country's future. There's a cover-up going on, the cover-up of the real insurrection. So, Anne, I have a theory, and I sent this out in a press release recently, that while you guys were there, you and all the people, and you didn't go into the Capitol, which was smart, but the people that did, that were enticed, that were entrapped into going into the Capitol when the Capitol Hill police opened the doors and said, come on down, kind of like Price is Right, okay, come on down, you know, and so they walked into the Capitol, milled around. That was essential because Congress was then, the representatives and senators were then brought underground, and that's when they had what I call the talk. And the talk was, you will approve Brandon, or you're not going to get your committee chairs, you're not going to get your perks, you're not going to get your campaign funds, you're not going to get anything. See, nobody's talking about what happened under the Capitol while you guys were up there. So it was critical for you guys to be in the Capitol. This is part of the insurrection plan, so that then they could stop the count and stop the challenge to the battleground states, the ones that sent Trump electors as well as Brandon electors. And that would be Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. So this was the part that you were supposed to play. And, of course, they need video of this, right? So what they do is they have some FBI, KGB agent up top with a bullhorn saying, come on in. You got to move forward. I've seen the tapes, right? And then you have the police, you know, firing tear gas on you guys. So do they show the guy calling you all up there? No, that's not in the tape. What's in the tape is you guys going up and the police firing tear gas. And what they say is, look at the insurrectionists. Look what they're doing. They're storming the Capitol. They're trying to take over the government. So you were actually pawns in a real insurrection. Anne, what do you think?
Yeah. I had people standing around me that must have had access to a radio or some kind of broadcast, because all of a sudden they're cheering and laughing and saying that we've claimed the Capitol, or we've, you know, gotten into the Capitol. And I'm sitting there looking, going, where? There was not, like, nobody up on the bleachers. There was nobody up. I'm sitting there all confused, going, how could we have taken over the Capitol when there's no, they won't even let anybody on the stairs. So it was a very confusing day. Very, very uneasy day. You knew you had, you know, black hats as well as white hats in the crowd, and you were,
explain,
you know, your eyes
explain,
were telling one
thing,
and then part of the crowd was like, yay, we've taken the Capitol, you know, and cheering, right, and everything. And yeah, it was a very confusing day. It really made me feel uneasy after the great experience I had way over by the George Washington Monument listening to the speakers. Then it ended, the day ended like this, and that really made me sad.
Well, let's talk about the black hats and white hats, because this is incredible stuff that you're able to present here, and then we can get it documented. So, you know, black hats, I guess you're assuming, you know, FBI, KGB, instigators, part of the insurrection, part of the coup, and the white hats would be the good guys, the Trump supporters. Have I got that about right?
Yeah.
So how would you tell the difference?
You could immediately tell by the way they were dressed.
Okay.
You can pick them out of a crowd. A lot of them were like carrying backpacks, and, you know, just they would have like all black on, but then all of a sudden have a Trump hat on, you know, which was very odd because everybody else was very dressed, very patriotic, and nobody, a lot of people were bussed in. So nobody was walking around with backpacks and all these other things. You know, we were just there for the day, for a couple hours, and then back by 3 o'clock, most of the people were already starting to go back. We had been on our feet since 9 o'clock, no food, no restroom, anything. So by 3 o'clock, everybody's, you know, the whole crowd's dissipating, going back to their buses or wherever they needed to go to get back to wherever they had come from, you know. So
hold on for a second. This is interesting because Congress recessed until after 8. I think it was after 8 for the House and almost 9 o'clock. No, after 8 for the Senate, almost 9 o'clock for the House. So why were they recessed for that long if you guys had left? Were people still in the Capitol milling around that you know of or don't know?
Well, not everybody left, but many people left early. But, for example, me, we left about like 5, we started walking because we had a 45-minute walk,
right,
because we heard that there was a curfew at 6 p.m. If you were not on your position buses or your area, you would be arrested. And I believe a lot of the people got arrested because they were out there during the curfew. And people did not know because we were having a hard time getting reception with our cell phones. They shut everything off, so it was hard to get anything out. So... But a lot of people.
Okay, so why would the Congress? This isn't. We don't have an answer to this question yet. I'm just speculating. Why would Congress wait 2 hours after curfew, okay, to come back in session? So my question is, what the hell happened in the meantime? Let's go to Pianki and then Alan. See if you guys have any theories or insights for us based on what you heard, Pianki. Or do you have any questions for Ann?
I'm still listening.
Okay.
I wonder why come they didn't shoot tear gas at the person on the tower hollering on the wall and telling people to come
That's
in.
A great question. Ann, did you guys talk about that?
Why they didn't shoot tear gas at the guy on the tower?
Why didn't they arrest the guy on the tower? Yeah, why didn't they bring him down? Why did they shoot
there
the crowd?
There was probably a group of six or eight of them already on the tower when we got there. We were the very first group that got to the
Wait. So
the
you're
building.
The first group to get?
And they were
hold on a second.
Up there. And
that's
the,
what I mean.
The police were all stationed in various – there was only like 10 of them. And I'm looking thinking, okay, that's a crowd that, or the police grouping that they're going to have to save our capital with all these people that they think are going to storm the capital. You know, it was like I said, it was a really surreal – You couldn't believe that they had so few police, if we were such a threat. You couldn't believe that they these people up on the tower and didn't even go over and talk to them or try to take them down or arrest them or anything. It was a very confusing time.
So why do you think that you were a threat? Did you have any intentions of walking inside the Capitol building when you went to the Capitol?
No.
Did anybody else?
No. And the only
So nobody had the intention. Go ahead.
No. I didn't see a single person try to get in through a window, a door. And the only reason anybody started going up there was because they were encouraged to go up there by this guy saying, come get your picture. You know, come get your picture.
I didn't hear
were
that
told
on
that
the
we
news.
Paid for it. This is our house. We paid for this house. The bleachers were all set up. They said, come up to the bleachers, come on down.
Price is right. The Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In. I've been calling it that for over a year. You just proved absolutely right. Get your selfies, come to the Capitol, walk in. Did you see the Capitol Police greeters with the doors open?
No.
Did you see them? No. So you're on the other side
Josie
of the Capitol.
May have. She was on the other side of the building.
Did you see the greeters, Capitol Hill Police greeters? Go ahead.
I was in the back, and the police were helping bring those little fences, those portable little fences down so we can step over them.
Oh, the fences that said restricted area? Those are the ones that had the restricted signs on them that somebody previously reported removing?
Exactly.
Those fences?
Yeah, they were helping.
The ones that would have stopped?
They were encouraged us.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The
they
ones that would have stopped Trump supporters?
Yeah,
law-abiding Trump supporters wouldn't have crossed those signs, would they? Because it said restricted area. So okay. So once again, Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In. Hey, Alan, you getting some new news here? What do you think of all this? Let's wake Alan up. He's probably having his ginseng tea.
No, I'm just listening, Greg. I'm just listening. It's interesting.
Is this a surprise? Is this a surprise to you, all the stuff we're talking about?
No. Because, like I said, I've seen it. I've heard it from varying angles. Within the different media houses that I listen to.
Okay.
In the U.S., that is.
Yes, so you guys are tracking this, because most people would get the Democrat view that this was a Trump insurrection, as opposed to my view that it was a Democrat insurrection, aided by Republican geldings. Jesse, go ahead.
When they told us head to the Capitol, me, in my mind, we thought we were just going to go and listen to somebody. No one told me, and went her way, because, you know, we just met there standing there at the time, and we exchanged phone numbers, but that was about it. I didn't know where she went, and I was heading towards the back with my group, and then I even lost my husband, my friends that I was with, and I was all by myself. A lot of tear gas, a lot of people in wheelchair got it very good. They were crying, and people were putting water in their faces to help them out. And I brought a pair of goggles from my store, and I said, I better put those in because I don't want that stuff in my eyes, but I got a little bit, not too much. So we were in the back, and like I said, the police were encouraging for us to move forward, you know. And all I wanted to do is get closer to the steps, and that's exactly what I did in the back. But they helped me. There were a lot of men, fence, you know, that you have to jump, and they have special plywood and everything. They had everything set up for you to walk across in the back.
How about that? Isn't that interesting?
So you can come as close as possible to the steps of the Capitol, and that's what I did way in the back. But we didn't know we were going there to go inside the Capitol at all.
Well, you weren't. You weren't supposed to. That was never in the plan. That's why I asked Ann that question earlier. Did anybody talk about going in the Capitol or anything like that? No. And she said no. Now, did you meet any of the folks like Ray Epps who said, we have to go in the Capitol? You guys have seen the video, right? On One American News, Newsmax. Okay, so you've all seen that. Ann, did you have any contact with Ray Epps or anybody else that was personally demanding you all run into the Capitol illegally?
No.
Okay.
No,
Joseph?
Like I said, it either was pre-taped some other time or they did it from another angle because I was on the very front.
Okay.
And we didn't see anything like that. There wasn't anybody going in anywhere. In fact, the gentleman that I met that went up there, I asked him the minute he got back if he saw any broken windows, any doors that were ajar or anything, and he said no, that there was absolutely no evidence from the front of the building that anybody had breached the building.
Had they walked in? Were the doors open?
No. He said there was one that was just ajar a little bit, but it was being held closed with a huge chain, and that was the only door he saw that was even open.
Yeah, these are huge doors. Just to give people an idea, these are big brass doors. These are massive doors. These aren't things you just kind of open up and walk through. They have to be open from the inside. And this is why I say this is an inside job. This is planned. Go ahead, Josie. Yeah, you want to elaborate?
And Ann has some pictures where nobody was inside. And this young man, he got closer to the door through the glass, and he took pictures. You
with
can
nobody
see it.
Inside.
We'll show to you. I was like, nobody was inside.
Yeah, you got a time stamp on those?
And was there a couple people in the picture inside, but not all the crowd that they're talking about?
No, there was nobody inside. The only thing you see in the picture, which kind of makes it hard to see, is shadows of other people standing there taking pictures. There was nobody inside the room.
So you were taking your selfies like the guy in the tower asked you to take or said you could take.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. So I'm trying to establish a timeline here because, you know, and I should go back in the congressional record and find out exactly when the Arizona challenge started. I think it was, let me see, the recess, I think it was around 1 o'clock they started that. But the thing is, Trump was still speaking then. So here's where the timeline falls apart. Trump was an hour late, right? Was there like an hour gap before he spoke or were there speakers that went late? Trump was late an hour, either Ann or Josie. Do you know why
he was
late?
Yeah, he was late.
Okay,
yeah.
Do you know why?
Yeah.
Were people still speaking? They went long. What happened? Or Trump was just late getting there? Or was there a delay? What was going on?
I
remember?
I think they were putting music and other people were coming to entertain us a little bit
while
we were waiting
late
for Trump.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, so what they tried to do, here's my theory, is that they wanted to have the Trump supporters there. They had it timed so that the Trump speech would end, if it ended on time or approximately, would give you enough time to get to the Capitol in time for the real insurrectionists, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, FBI operatives, or FBI KGB operatives, as I'm calling them now, give them time to open the doors with the Capitol Hill police and the D.C. police, to, you know, the greeters, to let you all in, you know, to walk in so they could close down the decertification of Brandon, the electoral challenge. So you notice the first state of the Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, the first state alphabetically is Arizona. So they took up Arizona. They just started the challenge to Arizona. They just started talking about it. And all of a sudden, everything got shut down. It's like the election count November 3rd. It got shut down when Trump was ahead. It got shut down when Arizona came up to be challenged. And there were several senators and a bunch of House members that said they were going to challenge this. So it had to go into special session and be recounted. And that's when Mike Pence, the traitor, you know, should have said, wait a minute, This is a challenge. This is a fair challenge. We're going to send both the Brandon electors and the Trump electors back to Arizona, let you guys settle it, send us one set of electors, and then we'll consider it. That's what he should have done if he was an American.
Yeah.
But he's a traitor. He's a globalist Marxist pig. He's the next one in line after John McCain. Oh, we're pretty direct here, Ann. He is. Wait. Oh, I got a name for Dr. Fascist, by the way. Do you know who I mean? If I say Dr. Fascist, Ann, do you know who I'm talking about? Do you have any idea?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dr. Fascist, you know, Dr. Anthony Fauci. So
yeah,
because
yeah,
we now find out he's got $10 million of secret investments he didn't report, and I think there's 40 more to go. I bet you it's closer to 50 million. So he is now the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying, vaccine drug push, Dr. Fascist.
Yeah.
How many?
I approve.
Well, thank you. Okay, there we go. All right. So here's why the timeline doesn't work. Yeah, Dr. Fascist, you want to sue me for libel, don't forget to get my name right. That's all I ask. You want to call the show, 215-333-3322.
I've got another thing to point out, too.
Go ahead.
Josie was saying that she had heard that there was a, like, state of emergency and you had to get off the streets by 6.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman that I was with, we knew that there was a subway that was going to close at 5 o'clock, and we were like, okay, we didn't get any food the day before, we're going to go get some food, and we left to go walking back at like 4:15. By the time we got to the subway at 4:30, it was even closed. So they scheduled the state of emergency long before, like at 3 o'clock, because we couldn't even get back to the subway to get some food, which was supposed to be open till 5. And then we had heard that they closed the airport, so people were having to rent cars to try to get home. It was like we're all just looking at each other going, did we just experience the same thing? Where was the state of emergency? Where was the, like, we weren't, like, destroying D.C. like Black Lives Matter had just done. You know, we're looking
How about
at
that?
Each
I bet they had
going,
toilets and restaurants
where,
open.
Where was the state of emergency, and why was the whole city shut down?
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why. Because they needed you as patsies for their operation. See, Black Lives Matter does what the deep state wants. So does Antifa. So you know, the FBI deep state. You know, the Department of KGB. You know, they're all part of the deep state. They're all operatives. So they do what they want. They want terror in the streets of these Democrat cities to keep the Democrat voters in line. Okay, but here's the thing, though. They had a curfew, so you tried to get out, and yet they take away your means of getting out. They take away your cell phone service. They take away the food. They take away the porta potties. They take away Uber. You know, cell phones are dead. You know, they take away the airports closed. You know, the taxis probably weren't driving. They take away every possible means out of the city to do what? To entrap you in the city after curfew. To prove their narrative, their false narrative, that this was a takeover of the Capitol. Now, how exactly do you take over the Capitol walking around up top when Congress is down below, safe and secure? How exactly do you do that? Who exactly was in charge? Who was commanding this insurrection? And who planned an insurrection without a plan, without weapons, without any organization, without a hierarchy, without a structure, with a bunch of random people walking around taking selfies? Who actually would do that and call it an insurrection? They're the worst insurrectionists in the world, if that's what they were doing. Go ahead.
And Greg, quickly.
Sure. No, we got time. Like, we got the rest of the show. Feel free.
The day before we were going to travel, we already knew that the mayor with a bunch of her clown criminals in D.C., they said that they were going to make us suffer. We already knew to bring enough snacks, food, drinks, or anything we wanted to eat, because there was not going to be nothing available. But, of course, people are not going to bring coffee 2 days prior to this event, you know. So we knew that they were even telling us there might not even be toilets open, that they were going to make the Trump supporters suffer. And that's, we heard that over and over.
See, that's
for
illegal.
A couple days.
You know, the fact that Jonathan Mosley said there was a permit. Jonathan Mosley proved that there's what I want. I'm hoping he'll call in, but he's probably busy on a case or something. But he proved that there's a D.C. permit, which I don't think has been released yet, which requires, they knew it was a demonstration, which requires porta potties. That's the park rules, the National Park Service rules, which D.C. is like part of the national, I guess the National Park or one of the, you know, organizations that governs the responsible for the land there. So, yeah, this is fascinating. Anyway, I'll get back to Ann for a second because we're talking about the timeline. So the timeline was they had to get Trump supporters into the building in time to stop the Arizona challenge. That's what this is all about. It was stopping the challenge so that the fraudulent Brandon electors could be elected by a Congress that was coerced into, you know, certifying that election by hiding downstairs because there was an insurrection up top, which is a bunch of people walking around taking selfies, right? So this is all part of the plan. Does that make more sense now, Ann, as to what's happened now that I've kind of filled in some of those extras? What do you think?
Yeah. It makes tons more sense. But I can't believe how, to what level they carried it out, though. By the time we got back to even get to a radio or television, they were showing these people that probably, just like us, didn't know that there was a state of emergency called or anything, where these police are like, it looked like it was dusk time, so it was after I had left, but they're like, kind of roughing these people up, and I'm thinking, well, shoot, they probably didn't realize there was a state of emergency just like we didn't, you know?
So wait a minute.
People
so there was
walking around
was
D.C.
It called,
not realizing.
Was it called during the day? Because they cut off your media. They cut off your phones, and they cut off your media. So they declared the state of emergency after they cut off your media? There was no way for you to know there was a state of emergency declared?
I think it was all called at the time Blowhorn guy was, you know, having us climb the wall.
Oh, so Blowhorn guy didn't say that there was a state of emergency, did he? How convenient.
No, he never said two words to us, nothing. Nobody said, sorry, you got to evacuate now, you know, go home. It's, you know, yeah, nobody said two words to us the whole time. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. We were there till after 4. Josie was there till almost 6. Nobody said a word to anybody. That's my point. So then we go back to the TV, and the TV showing these policemen, like, you know, kind of roughing these people up and trying to chase them away from the Capitol. And I'm thinking, well, they're probably just like us. They probably didn't even realize. They're probably just taking a stroll. You know, a lot of people were taking a stroll. In fact, the gentleman I met even stayed the second day and spent the whole day just walking around the whole Capitol. And nothing was ever said to him the very next day about, you know, oh, there's a state of emergency. You can't be here or anything. The whole
wait a minute. Hold on. He walked around inside the Capitol January 7th?
No. So, walk around the whole, like, the buildings and just was walking around the whole area, you know?
Oh, they hadn't set up the National
know.
Guard
apparently the,
fences?
The state of emergency
yet? Okay.
Must have been lifted by then.
Well, it was because Brandon was certified that night, the night before. That was the emergency. Oh. Who else
okay.
wants to comment? Bianchi or Alan? I thought I heard somebody else. Okay. You guys can jump in anytime. Ann, do you want to go
hey,
ahead?
Greg?
Do you have more? All right, yeah, Alan, yes.
Yeah, Greg, Alan? I'm going to be signing off for now, buddy. I'm gonna,
okay.
I'm leaving for now. So you guys have a good day, all right?
Yeah, hopefully we can talk again Friday, and we'll get you more. You see, but this is the fun. You can always hang on the show, and if you want to contribute anything, feel free. Thanks for joining us today, Alan. I appreciate it, and we'll talk more belief
sure,
stuff on Friday.
Sure, thank you.
All right, you take care.
Have a good day. Alan Dawson with Action Radio from Belize in Central America.
I love it. He's so good at this. Thanks, Alan. Alan's a friend of
sure,
mine I've known
bye.
For years and years, and we have a Skype line now, so we're able to get calls from all over the world. So, Josie, your worldwide friends, they're welcome to call in. Skype line works. It's right on the broadcast page, third line down, international Skype line. So, yeah, we can do anything.
I might have a friend from Australia to call, so we have to set up the time when we're on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She's
yeah,
a young
yeah,
girl. She has a lot of information about the vaccines over there. What's going on?
Yeah, let me check Australian time right now. Let me see where I've got. I've got my worldwide time. Sydney, it's 1:17 in the morning. So they're 17 hours ahead in Sydney. So it's a little early for them.
See,
I can do anything. I got my phone. And Jonathan's probably going to get this message right when we're done. Back to you, Ann. We got Ann Pianchi and Josie here left of our panel crew. And this hour is open anyway. So if you guys have the time, I'd like to pursue this and get everything we can documented. So then if Jonathan can't join us, at least we can hand this over to him. Ann, did you have anything further on that? Because I've got, of course, a million more questions for you. Did we get you finished with your last comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So this is, oh, no, thank you for being here. Don't go away yet. No, we're not done. I'm not done with you yet. What's that?
It was just a very confusing day.
Have you
going
been contacted?
From a very patriotic moment and everybody
yeah.
cheering and everybody, you know, happy and then the, you know,
calling a state of emergency and closing the whole city down. So.
Well, see, that was part of the plan. That has to be organized. You know, and notice the fact that Trump offered 10,000 National Guard troops to keep the peace at his rally. So he tried, and that was denied.
Correct.
And they, do you know what? And
correct.
Now you know why they denied him, right?
Correct.
And? Do you know why they
yeah.
they denied those troops? Because they would have kept you out of the Capitol. Yeah, go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wouldn't have been able to instill the blowhorn guy or
mm-hmm.
any of the tear gas and any of that stuff. Well, what mm-hmm. I later found out that shooting tear gas also, that you're not supposed to shoot it directly at people, and they were shooting it directly at us. It was
have you
2 feet to people.
Have you sued the Capitol Police for excessive force, or has anybody sued the Capitol Police or D.C. Police for excessive use of force?
Not that I know of.
Would you like to?
Well, is there a class action suit?
Not yet, but I don't know. I'm just wondering if there is one out there. But have you looked? I mean, I'm not accusing you. I'm just saying. But has anybody thought of suing these people for excessive force? I mean, that's what it looks like to me. I mean, if it was done to Black Lives Matter, I guarantee you the ACLU lawyers would have had a lawsuit the next day in federal court for civil rights violations. How come you guys don't have a case?
ACLU doesn't protect me.
Well, but where are the conservative foundations? Where's Heritage? Where's the Hoover Institute? Where's, you know, Cato? Where's all those legal foundations that Ed Meese set up, Southeastern Legal and Pacific Legal and, you know, there's like 13 of them around the country. Where is one single conservative legal foundation to sue the Capitol Hill Police for the excessive use of force for illegally firing tear gas directly into the faces of Trump supporters who were just there to watch what was going on at the Capitol? That's my question.
And you know, Greg, that's the problem with the conservative people. They don't do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They obey laws. They're good people. They're not criminals. They're not evil. Of course, there's a few here and there. They might be, but. You know, we're not after the money. We're not after doing malicious things.
Mm-hmm.
But these people have a plan from A B to all the way Z, and they go through it, and they have the whole team helping them. Look at all the Black Lives Matter and Antifa murdering and shooting people just because you said Black Lives are not the only one that matters. Every life matters. And pow, mm-hmm. you get a shot in the head, this girl in New York. And then the criminals are raising money with Chuck Schumer and all these people in New York City to bail them out, and they're out in the, back in the street. So these people are all well organized, and the conservative party are not organized because we still have over 200 good, innocent Trump supporters in jail and being punished and suffer. Some of them, they're not allowed to shower for 2 weeks, and this is unheard of. Of America,
so that's torture.
To allow this to continue.
They're political prisoners. They're being tortured. You know, you've got basically, and we talked about the racial aspect, you got basically white Trump supporters being tortured by black guards who are told that the white Trump supporters are all white supremacists. You know, the guards are being indoctrinated. So their indoctrination is causing them to do torturous things that now they're all accountable for it, of course. But
mm-hmm.
there's some major lawsuits that are waiting after these people get out when they start documenting their treatment.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
There's a lot
Definitely.
Of stuff left to do. But here's the problem mm-hmm. with the Republicans. You know, as you said, Josie just said, you know, conservatives are good people. Well, Edmund Burke told everybody, you know, 100 years ago that all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. So being a good person is not enough when there's evil around you. That's why I created Action Radio. Because talk radio wasn't enough. It's not enough to complain about things. You know, like I say, the geldings and talk radio have raised complaining and doing nothing into an art form. They're really good at it. You know, oh, we'll get them the next election. Well, how are you going to get them the next election if they cheat like they did the last election? You know, because they haven't fixed it yet. Well, we'll get them next election.
There's no guarantee
that's going to happen. Go ahead.
I keep hearing a lot of these senators and leaders in government,
mm-hmm.
conservatives say, oh, we want to make sure we don't repeat it again. Do something about it now or what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Take back the election that Donald Trump won. And it's going to happen. It's just taking a little time. We're just
still
waiting.
Too much time. Yeah, I think a little too much time.
I know, too much time.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you hear the speech,
huh?
Though? Did you hear the rally?
Yeah.
The rally speech? Okay. And did you get a chance to catch Trump's rally speech?
We were watching it together here.
Okay, Pianki?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the main reason why I was there.
Interesting. Not the speech January 6th, the one this Saturday. No, the speech this Saturday that he gave in Arizona. Did you listen to that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Pianki?
Justin and I listened to it together.
Okay. Pianki?
No, I was just going to tell her we're talking about the speech this weekend, not the one
in Washington a year ago. We're talking about this weekend. Now, did you notice the change in Trump? I pointed out in the first hour of the show. Did you notice total change in what he was saying compared to previous Trump speeches? Or no?
And did you know some people are telling me that that was not Trump?
crazy. That was Trump. What, because he's wearing a hat? Well, see, now I wanted to, remember
his
hat said...
Did you notice he didn't have a tie?
I didn't know, but he's done speeches without ties before. It was cold out there. It was wintertime. That was Trump. Trust me, I've seen him before. I saw him live. That was Trump.
I know, but some people are saying that it was Len Wood because they want to murder him. Oh yeah.
But everybody in that crowd was searched, and you've been to a Trump speech. You know how much you're searched before you go in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But and you don't think that the Secret Service is
insiders working all the time. People that work inside. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, but if anybody tries to do anything, you know what the Trump supporters are going to do? They're going to kill him on the spot. If anybody tries to hurt
Trump.
Oh,
probably. Yeah. Oh yeah.
but see, this is what I proposed earlier too, is that Trump, if he really wants to attract attention and make the liberals' heads explode, he should actually walk out packing a gun. He should put an old cowboy gun. Old 45,
like
Colt 45 on his hip, openly carried in a holster, all right, under his suit jacket, and say, this is how I support the Second Amendment. Open his jacket, expose the gun, and do like a 360 turnaround. If he did that, that would be worldwide news within seconds. All right. Let's get back to the speech last night. Something I want your perception on this, and if you have any more on January 6th, feel free. I mean, we've got another 35 minutes. I'm really glad you guys can stick around for a while. This is good. And I covered actually what I wanted to cover in the first hour, so I'm worried about the show title anymore. But there's something that I noticed in that speech. He used words like illegal alien, not illegal immigrant. He talked about the Biden surrender in Afghanistan. He never said President Biden, not once. It was always Biden. I wish he'd said Brandon. That would be even funnier. But he never talked about ventilators. He never talked about vaccines. He never talked about warp speed. He's been talked to. Somebody's briefed him. I think. Remember we were talking about that Trump has to have a change of heart before we can support him, or at least before I can support him, because he's still hung up on the ventilators. He's still hung up on vaccines. And this has only been the last couple of weeks. He was with, Bill O'Reilly doing the Rhino thing. And that was horrible for him. He's been pulled off that, it looks like. But I think he's been talked to by Steve Bannon, by Dr. Scott Atlas, by maybe a couple of other folks. Behind the scenes, and by Malone, maybe even Joe Rogan, but he's definitely been talked to more than anything else by Peter Navarro. I think that they've had a serious chat, and the sort of chat, if you want to be president in 2024, then you better stop talking about this stuff because these folks are all going down. Fauci's a mass murderer. He's killed more people than the Civil War by withholding treatment, by lying, by making legal treatments illegal, by bringing illegal treatments onto the market when legal treatments were perfectly good. And made those illegal, emergency treatments illegal and invalid. That guy's killed more people than you can possibly imagine. More than you got to figure that. In fact, Shelby was asking this earlier. What percentage of people died from COVID, and what percentage of people died with it? Well, it's about 95% died with it. Only 5% have actually died from it. 5% of 800,000 is about 40,000. Okay. So we're talking less than like half an average flu season. Everybody else was killed by Dr. Fascist. That's how bad this is. Just to digress for a minute. And Trump would never get elected.
Greg,
go ahead, Jesse.
The remdesivir is what's killing people in the hospitals, not COVID.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying too. Listen to the first hour. Go back and listen to it after the show when you get a chance.
Yeah.
But and look at my Facebook page and look at the Action Radio group. I've got the original July 2020 chart where the death rate for COVID was going to zero from a high in April 15th of about 16,000. started in February, high April 15th, dead. But, oh, Jonathan's on the line. Perfect. Okay, great. Let's get him on the line right now. Okay. I see I recognize
you.
I'm
too late as usual, right?
No, you're fine. You can always catch the podcast. But we got a really special guest. We got Ann on the line from Ohio that Josie met January 6th, who was there during the Democrat insurrection. And she's been giving us some fascinating details, talking about – she's got pictures, too, so I can get you guys connected after the show. But she's talked about, Bullhorn Guy. Ann, can you just kind of recap just the experience of Bullhorn Guy and just your experience right at the Capitol? We'll get Jonathan caught up.
You're talking about the person up on the tower?
Yeah. Do you know who that is?
Yes. Yeah. I was part of the group that walked from the George Washington Monument down to the Capitol early. I was one of the very first ones up against the wall that people were climbing up on to get onto the bleachers and everything. I was that close to the tower where the gentleman was, to all the police that were up on the front by the bleachers, and I have pictures of all that.
Well, I'm sorry, I just saw the text message a half hour late, but I do know what you're referring to. So if you don't need to repeat too much from me, as opposed to your audience, but that I guess we have, we're trying to figure out how to identify these people, and we're working on it. But what were your thoughts about? Well, let me ask you this question. When you say you walked over, how early did you walk over?
I was up at the Capitol probably by 1 o'clock or just after 1.
Okay.
So
On the west side of the Capitol, on the east side of the Capitol, pretty much the entire Capitol grounds was open because there were 6 demonstration permits issued by the U.S. Capitol Police for the east side. And the Capitol grounds is normally public. Like you say, if you wanted to go take a sandwich and, sit under a tree, anybody can do that. It's completely public. The question is, one of the questions there was, where they specially put up signs just for that day. And, one of the issues is when the crowds arrived, like when were those signs removed? That team removed the barriers and the signs. I'd be curious what you saw when you got there.
Yes. Well, they had, being from north, a lot of people may not know what snow fencing is, but they actually had just the posts in the ground with that plastic snow fencing attached to it, and they were rolling it up and putting it down on the ground when we were walking up. So anything that was there, they were already taken down. Then there was some kind of parking. What do I want to call them? They were like lazy horse size or sawhorse size metal frames that sat on the ground, and they were picking them up and moving them. So anything that was even in the way to prevent us from getting even as close as I did, they were already moving and taking down as we were walking up.
Right. And to me, the most significant part of that, maybe you'll describe it more, but just a comment because I get excited, is that to be a restricted area, since it's normally public, the signs have to be visible, because to enter a restricted area, one must knowingly enter a restricted area without lawful authority to be there. So, first there were demonstrations that were permitted, so basically anybody walking around the Capitol grounds had lawful authority to be there, going to or from the demonstrations that were permitted. And secondly, if you didn't know that, four years minus one day out of a presidential term, this is the only day that it's restricted. If you didn't know that, then you can't knowingly enter a restricted area. So the signs to me are the most important thing, as opposed to just the barricades themselves. And I don't want to interrupt your description, but that's just a focus that of mine.
I did not observe any signs at all.
None.
Mm-hmm. Well, and apparently that was the thing. I don't want to stop your train of thought, but let me add, Greg, if I can do so without you losing.
Oh, you got
train,
the rest of the show. I'm muted. You guys
one
just
of the
go
things,
ahead and talk. Yeah, no problem.
One of the things that we've discovered is that in the indictments, the oath keepers are accused, and of course there's lots of different people and there's slightly different things, but the oath keepers, especially from Florida, are accused of taking paramilitary training, which is completely false. And the and now they've changed it to say they took unconventional warfare training. And what Kelly Meigs has explained about that, response to the new indictment, is that that was Jeremy Brown warning the Oath Keepers how to watch for unconventional warfare being used against them by the government. Jeremy Brown apparently was part of Special Forces and was teaching how U.S. Special Forces topple governments around the world. And when I watched those videos, when I watched them like 2 months ago, whatever, from Revolver.News, I immediately got chills. I said, this is not the FBI. This is not FBI. This is CIA or military special forces that, because they were so cold, so organized, so methodical in removing those barricades with the signs on them, and that's what Jeremy Brown was teaching the Oath Keepers. He was saying that what to watch out for, not to get caught up in unconventional warfare by the government against the Trump supporters.
Let me just jump in here a second real quickly, if I can, because Ann had described that she could easily tell who are the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, who are the folks all dressed in black who then put on red Trump hats. She could tell, the Trump supporters from the people that were there, the Antifa government people. So we went over that a little bit earlier. So
yeah.
If you have a question on that, feel free.
Talking about two different groups? Or you think that they, because we don't know if they were private or if they were government, but they were just very methodical in the videos.
Right.
Ann?
Well, we were all just gathered up at the front, and just like Josie, I think we all thought that maybe there was going to be more speakers. All of a sudden, we had this great big group of people like shoved their way through and say, come on, we're going to take the Capitol, and I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, we're being told just to go up and just get pictures. Where did these radical people come from saying that they literally pushed their way through us, through the crowd, and every time somebody tried to go up, the Capitol police were shooting tear gas at us. So I even got, I didn't get hit, but I did get in a great big cloud to where I had to go back like 30 feet to get some fresh air before I could go back up to the front again. So it was a pretty crazy scene there for a while.
I believe simultaneously they had these groups that came, a huge group, I would say about 30 or 50, most of them were men, in the back and in the front too, that they were, move away, step away, we're going to go take the Capitol and come and follow us. And people were moving because we were not going in the Capitol. I mean, so we move out of the way. And these people are walking, just making a pass. And I know some of the Trump supporters probably follow and thinking, oh, it's Trump supporters. We're going to go too. So I don't know. But I wasn't about to go in the Capitol either. And I had knee problems, so I couldn't walk a lot. But, yeah, at the same time, they were doing the same thing in the front and in the back to go in. And, Jonathan, Anne has a few pictures of inside the Capitol that this kid went and took pictures close at the door, at the glass, and you can see the inside, empty, nobody there. So we'll send those to you.
Okay, yeah, it might be good to try to, get your story told as much as possible.
I send it to Greg. She wrote everything that she experienced and everything right away. And, Anne, did they put it in the newspaper or your local in Ohio?
Ann, are you there?
Ann, you're on mute.
I'm sorry. I was on mute. I'm sorry. Yes, I was encouraged by another friend who is very active and involved, and I was telling her my direct eyewitness account, and she's like, you have to put that in writing. You have to put it then in writing, because at the time, of course, the media and everybody was telling a completely different story. So Greg even has a copy of my article.
I
think
Josie
sent it to him. Yes, it was published.
Yeah, I got to find that because I get said a lot of stuff. My apologies. So I got to take a look at that again, and I can get you guys in touch with each other. You know, so Jonathan, like I say, Jonathan's kind of jumping in here, not having heard earlier stuff that we talked about. So like I say, I don't mind going over it again because I've got the opportunity to get you three together right now. So I'm not gonna waste that opportunity. But there's just some fascinating things that Ann was talking about earlier in terms of the timeline. And this is the thing that fascinates me is why, you know, the Trump supporters were, the speech was an hour late. And Jonathan, we've gone over this before. The speech was an hour late. The Trump supporters were late. They had to stop the Arizona challenge. So they had to send the people in early. I mean, everything Ann has said has proved that this was a Capitol Hill invitational walk-in. They took away the barriers. They didn't let the 10,000 National Guard troops come in. They opened the doors. They had bullhorn guys saying, come on down, like Price is Right. They did everything possible to get people in there. They had Ray Epps the night before, who's videoing with people saying, Fed, Fed, Fed. You know, so we know who this guy was. They had John Sullivan. They had all these folks. And I'm not sure. Stuart Rhodes, I don't know about. You have to fill me in on him. But you've got all these people. This was an organized effort. They had to have Trump supporters in the Capitol in order to bring the Congress below the Capitol to do whatever happened down there. And what I'm questioning, and this is something that that hasn't been brought up, the curfew was 6 o'clock. I didn't realize that. So if the curfew was 6, Congress didn't come back until 8 or 9 o'clock. What were they doing for 2 hours if there was a curfew? And I guess everybody was already out of the Capitol at that point. Or do we know what time people left the Capitol building, what time Trump supporters left? Because they couldn't have left after curfew. Or they violate curfew? Or did they know there was a curfew? I mean, how long were people in the Capitol for? Does anybody know?
When I left, around five, there was a lot of people still around the Capitol outside. I couldn't see because I was in the back.
But I think the official story is that they were outside, that the inside of the Capitol was cleared by around 3:30. There were people outside, and I think well past curfew. But inside the building, I think like 3:30 going on 4. I mean, there were a line of SWAT troops that came in around 3 from one side. I think it was 3, maybe.
Did they ever
inside?
Here's another question, too. I thought when
they
were talking
about
the
whole problem with that, though, is at no time did anybody, blowhorn guy or anybody, ever announce to any of us that there was a curfew and that we had to evacuate.
No, because they needed you there.
Nothing was ever said.
What happened to the Riot Act? You know, if they say this is a riot, why weren't the police with bullhorns or helicopters overhead or something screaming, disperse? Leave the Capitol now. You are disrupting, you know, the regular proceedings, which, of course, you were there to support the regular proceedings. We all know that. But they could have – there was no riot act. There was no troops sent in. The National Guard troops weren't in. There was no bullhorn. There was no effort from bullhorn guy. The police didn't say it. Nobody – you guys never read the riot act, were you? I mean, literally read the riot act. That's what it is. That's a real expression. No one told you to disperse, did they? Ann or Josie?
No. Nobody, blowhorn guy at this point, I think it actually left, you know, because
by this time, we had people
covering all the bleachers. Everybody was now up on the bleachers and everywhere by this time.
Yeah.
And blowhorn guy had done his job, you know, and had left by now. So,
well, the police could have gone up there and blowhorn to say, you know, you must disperse. We are reading you the Riot Act. And Jonathan can elaborate further. I don't know exactly what it says, but, you know, they could have dispersed you a whole lot earlier, could they not?
Well, I think maybe the federal government can afford a bullhorn of its own. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they own any bullhorns.
But what is the procedure for a riot?
They've gotten their hands on them.
Don't they order you to disperse? If you don't disperse, they move in?
Yeah.
So how does that work, Jonathan, legally?
Well, the Riot Act, I mean, the old saying of reading someone the Riot Act, of course, is probably state level. It's not that there's one, but, you know, but trespass usually requires somebody to tell you to leave before you're technically trespassing.
Okay.
And, you know, but they didn't, of course, they lie about it on the media and everything, but they didn't tell anybody that. So that's really important, is that they just didn't tell anybody. I mean, on the one hand,
didn't
level,
tell anybody to leave.
The legality,
didn't tell anybody
didn't,
to leave. That's
they didn't
ridiculous.
Ask anybody to leave.
Oh, God.
Right?
Yeah. And, Jesse, anybody tell you to leave?
They didn't tell us to leave. They didn't tell us that they had put a curfew. They didn't tell us that they were essentially closing up the city,
mm-hmm.
you know, virtually closing up the whole city. None of that was announced to anybody.
So that's
yeah,
literal entrapment. That's not
officially
just legal entrapment. That's literal entrapment. Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, officially we did not know nothing. But the word got around. Just, did you know there's a curfew? And then when somebody else, did you know there's a curfew? I said, what? We did not know, and people started running. And there were people in wheelchair. People couldn't hardly walk with physical problems. They said, I don't know how we're going to make it. And I truly, truly believe that a lot of these people are the ones that got arrested because they couldn't walk fast enough. A lot of veterans were trying to walk with a fake leg and all that. They couldn't walk fast. Yeah.
Jonathan?
And I couldn't really make it. We barely made it.
I think effective around 4 for the 6 blocks around the Capitol. And you know, for those of us with local phones, for example, that you know, some of them got an emergency alert on the cell phone, but apparently not every system did, and even locally. Did you have a – I think, too, is did you ever try to use the cell phones?
I mean, no, not at the
time. Talk about
them being
jammed.
Yes, yes. Yes. When I first met her, I asked her for like her social media and or some kind of, I was just going to immediately connect that way to her, and I never could get it to work. So we had to actually end up exchanging phone numbers because nothing was working. Nothing was working.
The old-fashioned way. I mean, because everybody talks about, you know, the journalists got their feed of Trump's speech from the microphone on, you know, the pool microphone on the podium. So they heard a perfect version of what Trump was saying, but they just assumed that everybody in D.C. was like carrying a flat screen TV around, you know, watching Trump's speech and whether or not he, you know, gave any updates. You know, they just assume because they're so narrow-minded that everybody could see what they could see from the pool, you know, the press pool of Trump speaking. And they couldn't realize that you're around hundreds of thousands of people in the windy cold.
Yes.
And cell phones don't work. And, you know, people couldn't hear what Trump was saying either in his speech or if he had said, you know, go home, they still wouldn't have heard it.
No,
you know, nobody would have known
what
Trump said.
He was saying just a little bit. Mm-hmm. You're right.
So anyway,
this whole thing was well planned and organized, and we know it. We all know it. So, you know, they're just, I believe President Trump and the military are just needing a little more time and to let them present all their show and all the lies. But the FBI, CIA, they're all in it. They're all in it.
And Greg, you can see that right now, you know, why they had to get rid of Trump, because they want a war in Ukraine so that all the arms dealers can make you know, another round of fortune.
Well, I think it's more than Ukraine.
You know,
they want business as usual. They want the decline of this country. You know, it's the continued managed decline that Obama and other folks have started. The Gelding Party and the Marxist Party, you know, work together. The Bushes and the Clintons are buds. They're all part of the same thing. So Ukraine's interesting. Now, if you want Ukraine information, you should go back to our Monday shows with Dr. Peter Pry. He wanted to talk about that with Mark Levin Sunday night. Just to give you guys an update, I'm hoping to hear back. Peter said he was going to write Mark Levin's direct producer. So hopefully we'll have Mark Levin on the show one day. Then we can really, you know, make some impact here. That's going to be kind of interesting. But anyway, point being that Dr. Pryor is an expert. He's been to Kazakhstan. He knows Ukraine. Josie's been to Ukraine too, you know, so, but he really knows the foreign policy situation. So that's Monday. In fact, I might get you two together sometime, Jonathan and Peter. It might be a really interesting show. But as far as the war with Ukraine, I asked Dr. Pryor whether he thinks that Brandon's son, Hunter, you know, made such bad deals that Brandon owes Ukraine something, and that's what the war is about, that this is a private thing, much like the Bushes, you know, Bush the younger had to you know, help Bush the elder's bad war by going back again and trying to fix what Bush the elder screwed up the first time. You know, so there's a lot of stupid reasons we go to war, really stupid reasons. A lot of people die and are crippled for life unnecessarily, tragically and wastefully. So I don't think they're necessarily going to do that. But if you listen to Monday's show and you understand that Ukraine's place in this, the biggest problem is that NATO is expanding into former Warsaw Pact countries when they have no business doing that. This is a U.S. and NATO caused problem. This is not necessarily a Russian problem any more than the Cuban Missile Crisis was caused by the United States. That's the rough equivalent. So Cuba is to the proximity to the United States as Ukraine is to Russia. Ukraine's on the Russian border. You know, when the Germans came through into World War II, Operation Barbarossa, we talked about this. Pyongyang was there. We talked about this yesterday. They came through Ukraine. Okay. You know, the Fold the Gap where I was when I went in 1982 into Germany before the Berlin Wall came down. I crossed Checkpoint Charlie, and I met a special intelligence officer who let me go with him right up to the forward army base at the Fold the Gap where the Warsaw Pact tanks would have come through. I mean, I've seen all this stuff. Okay. So I got a pretty, you know, fair understanding of it. Yeah, go ahead, Josie.
Hey, Greg.
You've been there.
I truly believe my personal opinion, because I've been involved in government and I know a lot about top secret stuff for a long time. Mm-hmm. My opinion is that this whole thing that they want to take over Ukraine and Biden is probably helping Russia and all that, is mm-hmm. to distract what's really going to happen in America. They always tried, like at the time that Trump was talking in Arizona, this Muslim was taking over the synagogue. So everything is planned, organized, and that's exactly
what they're doing. I don't think that
was planned.
Here's what's interesting about that. This is something – and Anne, you're welcome to join. You don't have to be an expert in all the subjects we talk about. None of us are. We like to speculate here. But I made the claim yesterday that since it was a British subject – that was probably a Muslim, you know, who crossed our border illegally at the south and then went to this Texas synagogue, given the close proximity to Texas to the southern border. Turns out he can't – I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. I've already got the article set up. Mm-hmm. Turns out that Brandon revoked four of Trump's, you know, Muslim terrorist nation, you know, protection measures. And this is how this guy was allowed to come in. So he comes in 2 weeks ago, buys guns illegally, so much for Democrat gun control, you know, and goes and takes hostages and terrorizes the synagogue. Fortunately, was killed. This is the first time I can remember the FBI elite hostage team actually, you know, rescuing hostages. Normally, I know of them for Randy Weaver, for Waco, for other things that where they terrorized Americans and shot and killed them, and then bulldozed them into the ground. That's what I think of the FBI elite hostage team. But this time, they actually saved the hostages, so they did the right thing. However, the wrong thing was leaving this terrorist in the country in the first place. Let me get another question, because I got Ann in here. And
you guys are so innocent in the mind. You Americans are so innocent in the mind.
Josie, we need your conspiracies. We got to hear them. You know, and I don't think of them as theories. Yeah, okay, fine.
All right,
let me ask you a question for – what's that, Josie? I'm sorry.
It's all well organized, my sweet, because a lot of these people are willing to sacrifice, to die for a cause in order to do something, and this is,
See, I like the George Patton philosophy. You know, no bastard ever won a war by dying for his country. You win a war by making some other bastard die for their country. So much for George C. Scott. Okay. So the question, I did some impressions earlier. You missed it. It was kind of funny. All right. So my question for Jonathan, now that I got you here, and especially with Anne, is that Anne is a victim of tear gassing by the Capitol Hill police illegally, because they're not supposed to fire directly at people. And apparently they did. So my question is, class action lawsuit, excessive use of force, individual lawsuits, what is being done or can be done, you know, to compensate Trump supporters for the excessive force of the Capitol Hill police during the invitational walk-in? Jonathan?
I don't know. The only thing I know of, and I helped write it for Joe McBride, is that Victoria White was beaten by the let's be clear too. It seems that the U.S. Capitol Police, mm-hmm. who are about at least 50% tour guides most of the time, they don't seem to have been the problem. It's when the Metropolitan Police Department,
the D.C. Police,
the District of Columbia arrived, that it got violent. So the Metropolitan Police Department, beat Victoria White, killed Rosalind Boland, and beat other people. And Joe McBride has sued for the beating, for excessive force, police brutality, beating this woman. She was trapped up. She was pushed up, part of the same crowd where the Bullhorn Man, they call him Northwest or Southwest Tower Commander, because they don't know what to, they just give them names while they're trying to find out who they actually are.
No one knows who he is. No facial recognition. No camera. Nothing. There's nothing on video of him. No surveillance tape.
I mean, I'm sure the government knows where to send the paycheck.
Well, he works for the government. I know that. But I mean, who is he?
But we don't know. We don't know, and we're working on. We're going to use a private company to do facial recognition.
Breaking news.
And
breaking news, folks. That was it.
My paralegal Carolyn, I have her working on a fundraising letter for Cynthia Hughes at the Patriot and Freedom Project to try to get, several million dollars for legal defense, and then Then she's going to work on this company she found to do facial recognition privately.
Great. Well, sue the D.C. police. Can you go after them on behalf of
Anna?
Well,
Victoria White did sue for police brutality. Whether anybody else has, I don't know. And whether they could is a class action, I don't know. But the thing is, the same guy with the bullhorn that told everybody, get closer, get closer, get closer. And then go into the thing. when everyone was pushed up there, they were beating on Victoria White, and she could not get out. If you say, well, they were beating people because they were trying to get in, there was nowhere for her to go. So beating her could not serve any valid purpose because she couldn't leave. And the blood in her white hoodie, when her hat falls off, you can see under her white hoodie because it was cold that day. There's blood on her head in the video that Joe McBride has put together, and he got it public released.
Who's Joe McBride again? Just so we know,
he's an attorney. He's been one of the lead attorneys. He's been on Tucker Carlson a lot, and he's representing about five January 6th defendants.
Okay.
And he's a great, effective guy. But there is a lawsuit pending. We have a little bit of trouble because we think we've identified the guy because he was wearing a white shirt, which we believe makes him a leader, a lieutenant in the Metropolitan Police Department, the way he was dressed. But we've got to amend the lawsuit to, we think we found out his name. And so we can sue them that.
Okay. And, was the bullhorn... known of a no brand that the D.C. police use or anybody in particular? Have you identified the bullhorn type from the tower?
No, that's what I want to do the facial recognition with.
Not the person,
and
but
I wonder
the actual
if
bullhorn, the actual bullhorn itself, because police have standard issue equipment, and the bullhorns the D.C. police use might be different than what the FBI uses, might be different from the Capitol Hill police, the greeters use.
I don't know. We haven't tried to blow. I mean, that's something we could see if we can blow up the video to that.
There you go.
To that level. But I don't
know if
your guests would got
to
look
at
him.
Go ahead. Yeah, Ann and Jonathan, you got 2 minutes, and then we can always get you guys back another time.
Well, I wonder, get a good look at the guy, at the bullhorn guy?
Would you recognize him? I have pictures from my advantage point on the ground.
Well, everybody does. That's all they have.
You can blow them up, though.
You can zoom in on it, though.
Yeah, you might have, good cameras have tremendous resolution. And if you would recognize him or be able to blow up his face, that would be good.
I'll connect you all after the show, and you can exchange pictures and phone numbers, well, and all kinds of good stuff.
I've
yeah.
already given the pictures to Josie, too. She's got them, too. Okay. So. But yeah. she wanted to see him the other day because she didn't believe, because we're comparing notes from her vantage point and my vantage point, so she didn't. So she wanted to see my picture. So Josie has them, too. So.
Yeah, okay. I got them. Very good pictures, too.
Wow. Yeah. Do you see the face of the person clearly in those pictures, Josie, if you blow it up a little bit?
No, I didn't do the close-up thing, but I think Jonathan will really like the one where this young man went and just took a bunch of pictures at the entrance of the Capitol where nobody was there. All you can see is the reflection of a young woman taking pictures, too, at the door. So we'll send you those pictures, Greg, so you can share them with Jonathan.
Okay. And send me the article again, please, too, because I need that. We got 30 seconds.
I will.
Jonathan, where should we go from here? Thanks, Josie.
Well, we have a ton of work to do, they're just, and of course, the government's being obstructionist. They're giving us junk and not the needle in the haystack. And so we need to try to identify these people, so we're working on it.
Sounds
good. We're working on, but we don't have a lot of staff. We don't have like an army like the prosecutors do.
Gee, funny how Heritage hasn't given you a grant for this, or Cato, or the Hoover Institute, or any of the legal institutes that ME set up, the Southeastern Legal, Pacific Legal. It's amazing how much money you don't have. The Republican National Committee has not contributed to January 6th defendants, nor have they contributed to the audits of Brandon. Fascinating world we live in.
Which they promised.
And
they were
what's that?
Which they promised. That's why they were raising the money for the election.
Oh,
but
isn't that interesting? Geldings.
They
and
committed
Marxists.
Hundreds of million dollars of fraud.
Yeah,
but they raised money and then didn't spend it on the election.
Who's this? The Republicans?
Yes, the Republican National Committee, the Republican Party.
RNC
they
fraud.
Asked
hey,
for money.
Yeah. RNC fraud Thursday. You want to do it? We got enough to talk about, but let's bring that up too. RNC
fraud.
Yeah,
we could do that.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, we do things on the fly. And call anytime you want to. Feel free. We got to go. We're off the air. Greg Pettis for Action Radio.
Thank you, everybody.
At blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. Legislative website, writeyourlaws.com, WRITE. And, of course, if you want to contribute to Action Radio, you can do that at paypal.me/actionradio. And if you want to be a sponsor of our show with real-life commercials, I'll make them for you. We'll go from there. So much fun today. Incredible information. Thank you all. Doing it again tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and the rest of the world. You guys can figure it out.